PFT Media. You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
It's the Chris Crespo Radio Show. Everybody likes him. Listen to his shit.
Let's all come out and take a look, all right? What hope you've got,
huh?
Come on, put one in your head. All you got is attempted robbery.
Armed robbery.
All right, armed then. Nobody's been hurt. Release the hostages. Nobody's going to worry over kidnapping charges. The most you're going to get is 5 years. You get out in 1 year, huh?
Kiss me, man.
What?
Kiss me. When I'm being fucked, I like to get kissed
a lot. Come on.
You're a city cop, right? Robbing a bank's a federal offense. They got me on kidnapping, armed robbery. They're going to bury me, man. I don't want to talk to somebody who's trying to calm me. Get somebody in charge here.
I am in charge.
I don't want to talk to some flunky pig trying to calm me.
You don't have to be calling.
What's he doing?
And will you get back over there?
What are you over there for?
Will you get the fuck back there? Get back there.
What's he doing? Look at him with him.
Get over there.
Go on back there, man.
Get over there, will you?
He wants to kill me so bad he can taste it.
Oh, God, I was going to kill
him. Attica! Attica!
Attica!
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
Remember Attica Drift?
Vaguely.
You're alive? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 296 of Cinema Crespediso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, Joan in the Crespediso studio, doing our thing, hanging out with Drew Sterkybern.
What up, dude?
How you doing, Drew?
Doing. I had a root canal yesterday.
Yeah, Drew had a root canal. Congratulations. Here's your current threat level update. Current threat level is bisque. Current threat level is bisque.
But what bisque? Are we talking like carrot, lobster, broccoli?
Looks like a
beef.
Looks like a lobster bisque.
Okay, just want to make sure. I mean, because, you know, bisque can be multicolored.
Current threat level is lobster bisque.
That's a poor name for a color.
Your sacrifice is unforeseen. With us. First time guest. Excited to have this person here hanging out with us. He knows a lot about movies. We already have talked a bunch about movies before we even started. He's also going to be the host of our newest show on the PFT Radio Network with PFT Media. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of The Major Scale, it is Kyle Eagle. Yeah! Yes. Say hello to the in-studio audience.
Sunday afternoon.
They're wonderful people. Yeah. They cheer at all the right moments, but otherwise stay perfectly quiet, allowing us to do our show.
Yeah, it's amazing you got that nudist colony to come in.
Yeah. We are, you know, fortunately everything is we're indoors, so we're allowed to kind of bend the rules.
See, what Chris forgot to mention
optional.
Was that it was a seniors nudist colony.
Yeah, so the folks out there can't see it.
Yeah,
but
that's the thing.
It was not good to look at.
With nudist beaches, nudist colonies, the average age usually is
50s.
Yeah,
retirement age.
Imagine senior nudist colonies in the future with all the tattoos and stuff.
It's gonna be weird. I was just thinking that yesterday. Yeah, man, if you go through Tinder or Bumble, all these chicks are like covered on the neck, back of the hand with ridiculous tattoos. Looks fine when you're in your 20s, ladies.
Yes. But it's like having sex with a sailor when you're.
It kind of does too. Yeah.
Well,
especially if they eat the spinach right beforehand. You're like, all right, Popeye. Big forearms too. Yeah. Actually, as a matter of fact, I was just sleeping with a sailor last week.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's what it was?
He was a Popeye impersonator. that's who that person was. I thought that date was weird. She was a strange lady. She kept going,
she had this pipe, like, surgically implanted in her teeth.
Yeah, I was trying to kiss her. The pipe kept poking me in the eyeball. Giant cheeks. Huge chin.
Can you take that pipe out? No. No, I can't.
It's like, why are you so obsessed with Robin Williams? Ladies and gentlemen, we are hanging out here in the Crespediso studio. Kyle is going to be the host of our newest show, The Major Scale, available as of Wednesday, September 12th at pftmedia.com, as well as, if not by then, very soon, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, anywhere. Now, podcasting is available for streaming. People can hear The Major Scale, a show about jazz, modern jazz, past, present, future.
And everything in between.
And everything in between. It's fantastic.
In fact, we got a big get on that one.
You talking about the one you just recorded?
Yeah, and that's very much everything in between.
That is. Or yeah, that one will represent exactly...
Everything in between.
Yeah, what the major scale really is all
and,
about. Yeah.
I'm gonna sneak one in there on it.
Yeah.
Skateboard legend turned musical maverick, shredder to wood shedder,
Tommy Guerrero.
Yeah, that's right. For anyone who knows that name, expect an amazing interview retrospective episode from the Major Scale in the coming weeks or months. That's the thing with these guys, Drew. They already have so many episodes in the can.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got...
ready to go.
At least I got a link to at least, what, I think four?
We got 12 altogether.
Yeah, 12 altogether. So the next, more. So the next three, four months worth of episodes are already ready to go. Yeah,
awesome.
So expect ready, steady entertainment from the Major Scale on PFT Media. Kyle, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank
really
you for
appreciate
having
it.
Me.
And yeah, we're going to talk about movies, and usually the way we do that is we start with the good old streaming pick of the week. And here we go.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Pick of the Week.
Picks of the Week.
Pick of the Week.
Pick of the Week. Cinema Crespediso streaming.
That's right, we do this every week. Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, there are just so many streaming options. How do you even know what to watch? Stop wasting your time flipping through all those titles. And we'll just help you out here with the streaming pick of the week. All right, so go ahead, Kyle, let everyone know, what is this week's pick of the week?
This is actually my stepdad's name, Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, wait, Thor Ragnarok?
Thor Ragnarok.
That's your stepdad's name?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, that'd be
this
awesome
is my father's name, Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Odinson.
Word out to Gutenberg, Sweden.
This is actually a problem. That was a pick like two or three weeks ago.
Was
Drew.
It?
Yeah, I think maybe
did
it just
get put
got
back in?
It might have just
pick
got
again?
Put back in. Oh, yeah, no. Episode 293.
Oh, that's a shame. It's
and
a good one.
And you know what happened with 293 when it was Thor Ragnarok? We didn't realize that it was also the pick in 290.
Was it?
Yeah, so already 290 and 293 is Thor Ragnarok.
That's fine.
So.
Watch it twice.
Garrett, all right, Kyle, here we go. What is this week's pick of the week?
Jeez.
What does it say?
Thor Ragnarok.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
That can't be true. Did you just put it back?
No, I just ripped it up. I literally just ripped it up.
Oh, okay, here we go. Put that. All right, Kyle, here we go. What is this week's pick of the week?
I bet you it's Thor Ragnarok.
No way. That can't be right.
It's Thor Ragnarok.
Chris, what have you done?
All right. The randomizer 9000 appears to be broken.
Hang on.
Let's go.
I like the technology you're using,
Chris,
Thor, but everything
this is the updated one,
Chris.
Too. It's 9000.1. Thor Ragnarok. All right.
And last but certainly not least.
Your mama. This is your mama. I don't think any of our mamas are on any streaming services. I hope they're not. So, we're going to have to send the randomizer in to get it fixed.
That obscure 70s TV show called That's My Mama, which might be streaming somewhere.
That's My Mama ties into a fantastic Coming to America joke where they're introducing the singer character Eddie Murphy plays, who does sexual child. He goes, he played Officer Joe on a special episode of That's My Mama.
Yeah.
When I hear That's My Mama, that's what I think. Okay, so the randomizer failed us this week.
It's broken,
so we'll have to send it in to get it fixed. Maybe get a 9000.2 next week. We'll see how it goes. So, okay, unfortunately, we're going to have to make up our own pick of the week. Drew, I think this is a good time then to do our new segment, What You Watching? That's right. What You Watching includes not just movies and TV, but comic books and music and anything that you're consuming lately. Drew Sicogran, go ahead and start us out. What You Watching this week, buddy?
I'm trying to think. I rented the new Spider-Man video game.
What's that called?
Marvel's Spider-Man.
They've been making Spider-Man video games since like the 80s, they've been making video
and
games.
And they have all been awful.
Yes, 100%. But I still love playing. Remember Game Boy?
Yes.
Yeah. Good old Game Boy. I still love playing Spider-Man something or other. I forgot what it was called. Totally forgot what it was called. But it was, do you remember the Game Boy game? You had to fight Rhino, Doc Ock.
I didn't have a Game Boy.
Oh.
Sorry. I can't.
Didn't have one.
Sorry to hear that, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. But you're enjoying it?
Yeah, the new one is it's a lot of fun. It's open world.
Yeah.
So think like Grand Theft Auto Spider-Man.
Okay. Swinging around New York City?
Swinging around New York City, having fun, hanging out. I saw this. I just happened to be swinging through the city and had to stop.
Yeah.
Because I recognized the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Oh, that's fun.
And I'm like, Doctor Strange is in there, I hope. And on through the mission.
That's fun.
It's a little rough in the beginning.
The gameplay, you mean?
The gameplay itself.
Learning how to play it.
It is definitely a little bit challenging.
You're also an old man now.
But once you get it down, it's a lot of fun.
It's different when you're a kid. When you're a kid, you pick up a game like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Man. The Kingpin whipped my ass the first time I went up against him. But it's a lot of fun, and I highly recommend it.
Very cool.
It is very highly rated on most of the... services.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. I saw it popped up in headlines and stuff.
Yeah, and it's... I'm not sure if it's quite like the 9.5 that everybody's been saying, but it's definitely a solid 8.
You're enjoying it? Are you a video game person, Kyle? Have you ever been at any point?
When I was a kid, I could really... play Sonic the Hedgehog.
And yeah.
I still enjoy the Marios.
Yeah, they're fun.
The new Mario is supposed to be fantastic on the Nintendo Switch.
With the hat?
Yes.
I've heard crazy stuff about
that. Yeah, it's supposed to be a wild game.
But remember when Mario Brothers was around?
Yeah.
You're a teenager. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, kids don't do drugs. And you're like... This guy eats mushrooms.
I was about to say, and then he eats flowers and throws fireballs.
Yeah, right. They were so colorful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That game, I always loved Mighty Bomb Jack. It's not very well known.
Is that a Nintendo game? Yeah. NES? I think I know what you're talking about.
A lot of those Nintendo games...
That may have been like one of the original Japanese games.
They did Japanese import. Nintendo's Japanese, so they took their Japanese games and tried to rework them for American audiences.
Yes, so yes, that's true. Yeah,
it might have been one of those.
Okay. Now, here's a video game for you. This my friend Tony Warner can just test this. Okay, if you had a Sega system, we're talking the late 80s here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you push the buttons in a right way, there was a game built into it.
Get out really? Of here.
Called Fantasy Zone.
Interesting.
I had no idea about this. So psychedelic.
Really?
And the music. I remember we just watch it, didn't really care about the score, just to hear the music, but you had to get to the next screen to hear the scene more psychedelic stuff.
To get more music, yeah.
And you'd fight like a giant snowman and his carrot nose projectiles. It was so out there.
Yeah, you do.
What
the fuck is you looking this?
It up? Yeah. Fantasy World?
Fantasy Zone.
That's a crazy title.
And it was in the game. And my friend Tony, I think, found it by accident.
Really?
But I never...
So it's like an Easter egg of a game, an entire game.
Back in the late 80s.
The player controls a sentient spaceship named Opa Opa, who fights an enemy invasion in the titular group of planets.
That is awesome. Opa Opa definitely sounds like a Japanese sound. Oh, yeah. That is great.
But I never could get into the violent games. You know, when you rip out someone's spine,
like a Mortal Kombat type thing.
Yeah, thanks.
There was a Punisher game that came out that was super violent.
Yeah,
like, so much so where if you like, obviously you had to kill the bad guys because you're the Punisher,
right?
But like, you could grab them and bring them to certain areas of the level and like. Like, I definitely remember chroming bad guys. Like, literally throwing them in a chrome bath.
Wow.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, like, it was super violent. I had so much fun playing that game.
Very
I just like the psychedelic ones.
Oh, sure. Anything. Well, check out that No Man's Sky, where all you do is go through outer space, and it's got progressive... You would appreciate this. And take pictures of stuff. It has a progressive created soundtrack. So as the game plays, it's creating the music... And then depending on what happens in the game, because it's open map, if you encounter danger or if you discover something new, depending on what's happening, the score changes.
Oh, wow.
Based on exactly what you're doing.
I've got it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's called Progressive something or other. Okay, so Drew, what are you watching? You're playing a video game. Kyle, anything you're watching specifically? Maybe for someone's passing, perhaps? You know.
I am. Well, you know, you mentioned Attica. I want to say Attica has the best prune jack in the penal system. Ask for the Warden's Blend.
Oh, really? That between the walls, behind the toilet.
Yeah, prune jack, which was also a drink mentioned in The Longest Yard, starring our dearly departed.
And any halfway decent prison movie better have some sort of a prison hooch reference in there. Yeah. But yeah, speaking of, rest in peace. Burt Reynolds passed.
Man,
I remember in college, you guys had that picture of Burt Reynolds on the bearskin rug.
It was hanging in our apartment.
They had a note that asked you to donate $1 to Burt so he could get some clothes.
Yes. And then
there was a surprising amount of money on that thumbtack.
People would tag $1 onto Burt.
It was really weird.
Apparently, Burt Reynolds regretted that.
Cost him the Oscar.
That's what he says.
Really?
He says it cost him the Oscar for Deliverance because Deliverance came out 3 months later. And he had to get drunk to do it. So he says he wobbled in and then he wobbled home.
Is that why the smile was so big? Because he was shit-faced.
Yeah, but he always had a great sense of humor.
He did, though. And so something deep in his mind knew this is the right thing to do.
It was, especially at the time.
Yeah, the objectification of women was just flipped on its head with the objectification of the biggest star in Hollywood at the time, Burt Reynolds, and looking great doing it. Laying on a bearskin run. He had another one on his chest.
Yep.
So wrapped around his legs there.
And he wore a rug.
Yeah.
And he did, and then he was wearing a
Think about too. That.
How far back did that toupee go?
I think he wore it early. Because if you see on Gunsmoke, he's losing his hair.
Oh, no. Okay. So you're going to the 60s already?
But, you know, think about this. That guy, no one's ever beaten that record. Being the number one box office star in Sex Symbol.
Yeah.
And he wore a rug.
Yeah, and got away with it.
And it was obviously, this dude's wearing a rug.
Yeah. But nobody said anything about it.
He was still confident enough.
Oh, yeah. And that picture in the shag rug, I think we can all kind of say, Burt Reynolds is the man that women wanted and the man we want
to
be.
Wanted to be, definitely. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
He 100%. Was 100% encapsulated that ideal for a long time. I mean, he dominated the 70s.
The laugh.
Everything. The laugh, the look, the mustache.
Come on. Although I thought he looked cooler without the mustache.
Striptease era, or even earlier. So he went without the mustache for a long time.
Yeah, White Lightning, no mustache. Yeah,
all the way up to Deliverance, no mustache.
No mustache in Deliverance.
Yeah, so then the 70s came, mustache stood up. Yeah. Like, it was in style. He saw Gene Hackman, was like, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. It's like, people respect Gene Hackman, I'll grow a mustache. And then he had it all the way up through Striptease.
Yeah.
Yeah, for two decades.
He was in a TV show with Norman Fell for a while called Hawk.
Really? Yep. Was this an 80s show?
No, it was the 60s. They used to play it on Channel 43. If you go back a ways here in Orlando, out in Melbourne, but, you know, tonight at 11, Burt Reynolds is Hawk.
That's fantastic.
You know, co-starring Norman Fell.
That's great. Well,
that was his partner, Norman Fell.
Well, they were partners together. That must have been fun.
Yeah, Roper.
I get to show up every day to work with this guy. So in honor of Bert, you brought us some beverages here.
Yes.
So we are going to toast to him.
Yes, to Bert Reynolds. He's got a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Yeah, there you go. Cheers. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Who made the South cool.
He made the South cool. I was saying this to Simon Time. We were talking because when the news broke, he texted me. He was like, "Oh my God, Burt Reynolds!" He was so blown away by it.
Yeah.
We were like, you know, I think, is that it? Did the 70s just die?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think the 70s is now officially dead.
Well, Travolta's still around.
Yeah, but he's not the same.
He doesn't encapsulate the same way. SNL and Grease, but Grease is that whole weird 70s throwback to the 50s.
Yeah, thing. He's, I mean, yes, he's still around, but is he really?
You know, Reynolds in Deliverance, John Voight was supposed to hold a crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't aim it. He kept shaking.
Oh, really?
So who'd he get? Bert. You know, or he's like, John, don't worry, I got
this. Is Voight still a young man at this point, really?
But he's Burt Reynolds, man.
Burt Reynolds is a man's man. Yeah,
Burt
That's
Reynolds,
so funny.
Big Southern tradition in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Football.
Yes.
And he played football.
Mm-hmm.
For FSU.
And then, what's the longest yard his idea, or did he produce that thing?
I don't know, but I think he certainly
he saw it. He was like, a football movie, I'm in. I want to do it.
He helped. And you know, one thing about Burt, man, he always played with the same guys. Like, he met Jack West in The Twilight Zone,
mm-hmm.
and they appeared in several movies together.
Mm-hmm.
He was friend. Everyone he worked with, if he didn't get along with you,
then
he just didn't work with you.
But then, if you do get along, it's like, I might as well keep working. You see that to this day.
I mean, it happens all the time.
Love working with the same people and over. Why ruin a good thing? You know?
Well, you know Jerry Reed, the country singer.
Yeah.
He put him in a movie called WW and the Dixie Dance Kings.
Okay.
And that was his first movie role. But he went on to play The Snowman in Smokey and the Bandit.
Yes.
And then he was his adversary in the White Lightning sequel, Bama McCall, which he basically played a blaxploitation style Mr. Big.
Yeah.
But a slick Southern white hipster. He wore the pimp clothes, but he was Jerry Reed.
So it was a Dixie exploitation then, is what's going on?
My friend David Gillespie and I have the genre is either redneck noir or hicksploitation.
Hicksploitation. There you go. That's a great one. Redneck noir is funny too. But I feel like redneck noir has to have certain elements. It has to have.
See, everyone,
what's the redneck noir version of the saxophone score? Does it have to have a banjo, like a morose banjo? We need that version of that.
Deliverance would be redneck noir.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I see that 100%.
Smoking the Bandit would be hicksploitation.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I see those lines very clearly.
Every time I bring this up, people immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. We get it. You know?
Yeah.
Those work. Those are great signifiers.
I'm just waiting for the Angelica or Film Form in New York to be like, yo, get academic about it.
We're waiting for the we need you to curate a whole floor at the Museum of the Moving Image on hicksploitation.
Yeah, and it'll be like presented by like Sal Rubinstein, born and raised in New York. You're like, today we're going to talk about redneck noir exploitation. You know, like, because nothing says it. Because once a New York academic, you know, gets into it, then it's official.
No, yeah, that's true.
If we can get a British guy to talk about it, that'd be even better.
If we get a British guy
French.
First.
Okay, French.
Fine.
Okay, French leading the way. But once we get any sort of European academia on board with it, then the New York Film Society will just want to glom onto that.
Yeah.
And then L.A. will just be like, I don't know.
Yeah, because you got to get a French director who'll come over and, like, you know, like, I wanted to go to the South. I wanted to see the moonshine.
Yes.
The NASCAR.
Yeah. You know, and then make their movie. Yeah. What we need is Gaspar Noé to come to America and make his exploitation film.
We cast Richard Petty as the criminal. You know, yeah.
As the big boss. All right. So are you actually watching? Have you watched any Burt Reynolds stuff? Or are you going to watch some Burt Reynolds stuff?
I watched White Lightning and WWE and the Dixie Dance Kings of the night. Now, that's a good movie because Burt Reynolds was. He took over a lot of WWE. It was directed by John Avildsen.
Yes.
He ended up doing.
John Avildsen, Rocky, and The Karate Kid. I've been saying to people for years, if you want a fascinating double feature, watch Rocky and The Karate Kid. There is an amazing amount of crossover between those two. They're both essentially sports.
Karate Kid's a great little film.
Both of them.
Really great film.
Both with scores composed by Bill Conti.
Yeah.
Great Bill Conti scores. Which then makes you think, why did Rocky V not work? Because John G. Avildsen came back for that one. They purposely got John G. Avildsen to come back for Rocky V.
Stallone probably should have written it as if he was never famous. He's not hungry anymore.
Yeah.
Rocky's written by a hungry guy. It's based on Chuck Wepner.
Yes, exactly. Yes, based on Chuck Wepner. And it was Stallone was literally a hungry actor, which is why he wrote that character.
It's a great film.
But then when he had his career, not necessarily falling out, but like he wasn't as popular as he was, and his movies weren't going... He was making straight-to-video movies, you know, and his star had fallen. Then he found the emotional resonance to write Rocky Balboa, which is then kind of a return to form for the original Rocky series. Anyway, John G. Avildsen.
Oh, yeah, so he was directing the movie, and apparently Reynolds chafed with it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, look, man, you know, Southerners don't talk like this. You're just making fun of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that.
And if you watch the movie, he's a con man. He robs gas stations.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this hustle down, and he cast, like, Mel Tillis as a gas station attendant.
Yeah.
And John G. Avildsen apparently was like, why? This guy can't speak. He studied. He goes, that's Mel Tillis, man. He's a Southern gospel singer, and he adds authenticity. When you watch the movie, if you've ever spent any time in the South, you recognize the language, the cadence. And he picks up the band called the Dixie Dance Kings, and Jerry Reed is one of them. Jerry Reed, James Hampton, and Ned Beatty.
Ned Beatty, okay, yeah.
They're in the band.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
And, you know, Ned Beatty's from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
James Hampton's from North Texas, Oklahoma area.
Okay.
So it's all very believable.
Yes, because he's actually getting... It's like when Michael Mann makes... Chicago cop movies, and he hires local Chicago cops. Dennis Farina ended up being the biggest example, because then he turned into an actual actor who still mostly does cops.
Pretty much. I mean, he's on Law & Order all the time.
He's either cops or like a mafia guy.
I still say that Crime Story was the better of his 80s series next to Miami Vice. I loved Crime Story, and I actually met the guy with the soundtrack for that.
I don't know
that.
If I ever watched Crime Story.
Dennis Farina's first acting gig.
That was his first acting gig?
Yeah, and it's so believable.
I thought it was Manhunter. He did that first, and then got him for Manhunter?
I think it's for starring gig.
Okay, sure.
And he was...
He's the lead of that show?
He's the lead,
I need to watch this show.
And I loved how... Al Cooper and I have worked together and known each other for many years, and he did the score for the show, and I don't know if you know, Al Cooper discovered Lynyrd Skynyrd, which was in The Longest Yard.
Bring it all back around.
The movie tie-in. And he had this great breakdown of the show. He goes, the lead in Crime Story was Dennis Farina. Not attractive compared to Don Johnson and...
Crockett and Tubbs. Yeah, sure. Yeah. What's the guy's name who played
Philip.
Mike? Philip. Drew.
I don't,
you don't even know?
Anyway.
Jamie Foxx.
But yeah, Jamie Foxx, yeah. Rough looking, you know, when he was the protagonist. The antagonist was this good looking Italian guy with a shameless pompadour.
That's funny.
And it was
the opposite of Dennis Farina. Yeah. He was like, hey, what's going on over here? Give me some sausages.
Yeah, and he had the Chicago accent. Yeah, you know, yeah, like, yeah. He's an Italian.
Because he's like so authentic.
Yeah, the Southside Chicago cop. Yeah, yeah. You know,
so it's the same thing. Yeah. They're casting these well-known Southerners, like real Southerners, to play as opposed to just hiring some guy from New York to put on an accent.
Yeah, to really do it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so I guess he kind of kicked Alvison off the set, and then he basically, I guess, kind of ghost directed it.
Oh, there we go.
But it's a charming film. It's one of Art Carney's best roles.
Oh, yeah, really?
He plays this kind of...
Art Carney was a big deal back then.
Angel of death, corporate overseer slash bounty hunter to get... You got WW the Dixie Dance Kings. You can watch it on YouTube. It's never been on VHS or DVD. It's a great, charming flick. That and White Lightning.
And White Lightning, yeah.
The trailer alone for White Lightning is worth watching.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. These are our picks of the week, guys. The Spider-Man game. What's the name of the Spider-Man game?
Marvel's Spider-Man.
Marvel. It's a very simple title. No wonder I can't remember. Marvel's Spider-Man, WW and the Dixie Dance Kings, and White Lightning.
People White Lightning. You need to watch that. Lightning. Yeah, because with the... You ever watch Archer?
I've seen
from time to time. Burt Reynolds is on Archer a lot. Because Archer is obsessed with the Gator trilogy.
Oh, Gator. Okay. Yeah,
and it's only two of them. White Lightning and Gator.
Yeah.
And that's really funny. His name in the movie is Bobby Gator McCluskey.
Gator McCluskey.
Also known as White Lightning. I mean... It don't strike twice, because once... is enough. That's funny. From the trailer.
That's fantastic. Yeah, man. Burt Reynolds is iconic. I noticed you poured us another shot for Burt. Is this for Burt?
This is for Burt.
One more for Burt.
For White Lightning, because...
Cheers, sir.
It only strikes once. Because once is enough, actually.
Drew is not for our play game because he's on antibiotics at the moment.
I told you, man.
Otherwise, he would.
Had that root canal.
Mm-hmm.
My
condolences, but hey, you know what? You said it worked out okay. Besides the monetary thing of it,
I mean, yeah,
yeah. We know. Save that for the Dr. Juice 2 cents.
Hey,
what are we drinking here, Kyle? By the way, I'm just drinking mystery liquid out of your flask.
Oh, this is Prune Jack from
Sing
Orange
Sing?
County.
It is from an Orange County prison system.
Okay, oh, also local Prune Jack.
Local Prune Jack. This is the Warden's Reserve.
I thought I tasted citrus.
Over 33rd.
This is from Cell Block A.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It is aged for a, you know, between probation hearings.
Oh, okay.
Finest you can get here in the Sunshine State.
It's making my the tip of my tongue and my lips tingle a little
That's
bit.
That's the battery
there.
Acid.
There. Yeah. Oh.
The battery, yeah.
Delicious. Delicious. Yeah. Okay.
You know one thing about Burt Reynolds real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
He gave our beloved governor a mouthful. Remember?
Mr. Scott?
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead and we talked about this yesterday.
Now, Mr. Reynolds is one of these guys who, like, made movies down here.
He is
almost single-handedly responsible.
He had to hack down the jungle of the Florida film industry to get people to even think of making movies
back
here.
In the 70s. Mm-hmm. In fact, The Longest Yard's set in Florida, but they didn't want it. So they shot exteriors here, and they filmed it in Georgia.
It's not crazy, Drew.
And that was the impetus.
They didn't want it.
Dude, that's how it all starts.
That is how it starts.
And guess what? That movie is apparently what gave Ted Turner, who's the impetus for making Georgia number 7 in the world, in film and TV production.
Yep.
And they're our northern neighbor, and yet...
Ted Turner was just...
We could have had it. It could have been us.
Or both.
Turner was a no one. He saw there's money here to be made.
Yeah, and Rick Scott allowed the film benefits to
dry up.
Yeah. And Burt Reynolds gave him a mouthful a couple of years ago, and they, quite rightly so.
Yeah, because it's all Sony Productions are now gone. Fortunately, Oprah is here with a show called David Makes Man, which is shooting here in town. It's set in Miami, but it's shot here. I'm actually going to... Make sure to even at least check out the pilot when it comes out. I would like to, you know, just to support local productions.
Yeah.
But it's a real bummer, you know. I hate when something is set in Florida or even specifically Orlando, and it's so obviously not Orlando.
Yeah.
My favorite example is my favorite example is Melissa McCarthy's Identity Thief, which was written by a guy who lives in Winter Park, which is why he set it in Winter Park. And then when it got to the production part. They never change any of the cities, so they're just like, it's Winter Park, Florida. And then they're like, all right, we're going to Florida, and then the establishing shot of Winter Park, Florida is a coastline.
Yeah.
It's a big beach.
Like
and then it cuts to a house in Winter Park. Like, that's fucking...
That's not Winter Park.
At least an hour away
from
Winter Park, you idiots. So that stuff makes
me
so
mad. And they think about the industry and the kind of money it brings.
So much money, so many jobs, you know? They act like, we're just giving this money away. We're not giving the money away. That money is going into our economy, you know? Idiots. They would rather give that money to, I don't know, Wawa, so we can get more $10 an hour gas station jobs.
Well, you know, when we first met, we were talking about, do you think people, because apparently Orlando has more podcast happening than any place in the
It US. Seems that way.
Yeah.
That and food trucks.
From being on the inside everywhere. Of it, right?
Yeah. But do you think that maybe there is a reason because there's a gap? Almost like there's a there was a first bite and never finished the dish of like the promise of a entertainment industry here?
Maybe.
Perhaps.
So many creative people looking for outlets.
Well, that, yeah. I don't know, a lot of them come here because they want to work at Disney, too, and Universal. And there are these entertainment, like, industry... Like, it's all right there.
They hire a lot of actors and dancers.
It's fast food entertainment. It is all right there,
but for some reason, they won't invest in the actual... Like, they'll invest in the attractions, but not in the actual film industry in Florida.
Which is odd.
And I think
I've always found it odd.
Disney's here. Disney's Marvel movie is being made in Georgia.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's two Orlandos. One side of Sand Lake and the other side.
Sand Lake is an interesting divider. Yeah, sure. It's a touristy side and then the real Orlando, which is when you see the memes, do you live in Orlando? And it's a picture of Disney. It's like, no, I live in Orlando. And it's a picture of Lake Eola. Mm. It's like, actually, no, I live in Orlando. And then it's a picture of Maitland. So it's just like Lake Lily. It's like, look at this lake. Yeah. I could swim across it in 30 seconds. Okay, you know what I'm watching this week? I'm watching a show called The Expanse. You guys know about that show?
I do know about it.
On sci-fi.
I do about it.
I started watching. I'm like 6-7 episodes in. It's not bad. It's like 75% a good show, 25% a bad show. So I'll take that ratio right now. It's a sci-fi channel show, which I'm surprised whenever they turn out any sort of quality. Because it's a sci-fi channel.
Oh, yeah. Well, sci-fi used to only be... the only quality was the 1 hour they played The Twilight Zone.
Exactly. Their only quality was stuff that was produced for something else, and then they're just syndicating it. Yeah.
But lately,
they've gotten...
They're doing Happy.
They're doing Happy. Happiest. Which Drew has raved about.
I watched it.
Yeah, Drew raved about that show.
That was a lot of fun.
Drew loves it.
That's Christopher Maloney's masterpiece.
I love Christopher Maloney.
Dude, seriously. He's in another level now.
Yeah. That is... I think that character is like a mixture of his character from Wet Hot American Summer and Law and Order have gotten together, and now he's a fridge fucking ex-cop.
Dude, seriously, that movie. I'm not a big fan of comic book adaptation.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But I love the Green Lantern. I hated the movie.
Well, the movie was garbage.
The movie was terrible.
Well, Green Lantern's like Lord of the Rings epic big story.
Can be.
But they have Ryan Reynolds fighting a doo-doo monster imagining brick walls.
Yeah, we need... but then you get Happy. Let's serialize it.
Yeah.
Let's take the comic book, which is, as you mentioned earlier, it's already storyboarded.
Yeah.
Let's just film it.
Yeah.
Or how about this? Let's animate it.
Yeah, even better.
Well, there is an animated character in there.
Patton Oswalt plays him.
Or just Patton Oswalt. It's fantastic. So sci-fi has been doing some good stuff. Yeah. They do that, and I really like their horror anthology show, Channel Zero.
Oh, yeah. I've heard some good stuff about
it. The first season's fantastic. Second one's pretty good. I couldn't get into the third one.
Probably too much too soon.
Maybe. They did, because they're short. They're like 6 episodes each, so they can crank them out pretty quickly. But they also, because they're all based on Creepypasta, the Creepypasta website, and stories people submit to there. And the first season was based on, like, the best, most popular Creepypasta story. So, I don't know. They may have just, like, started from too high of a place. Maybe, you know, shut their wall too early. Anyway. But The Expanse is quite a good show. I'm a big sci-fi fan, and it's a lot of fun where it's so far in the future. It's like there's Earth, and there's people living on Mars, but they're, like, an independent war-based colony that they answer to no one. And then there's the people who live in the asteroid belt on different bases on the belt. And they're the ones sending all the materials back to Mars and to Earth that they need for their technology everything. And everything. And when the show starts with like 3 screens worth of text explaining everything. It's like, oh my God, I have to read so fast. but then they re-explain everything as they go along. But the whole series is ultimately about how there's some big conspiracy, and I think it's so a war can break out between Earth and Mars, and the Belters, they're trying to gain independence from Earth. So there's like a cop played by Thomas Jane who's investigating the side story. And then there's these people, these salvagers, a civilian crew who found like a distress beacon, but then they stumbled on some other mess. It's a huge story. It's a lot of fun. Based on a series of books, apparently.
It sounds like how it probably... go in real life, because I was just thinking when you said a colony that answers to no one, I was thinking Rhodesia in the 70s.
Which is not a good example of and you know what, the Belters that want independence not portrayed as the good guys so far.
Sure.
So that's how it's pretty, it's kind of similar and funny you bring up Rhodesia.
Well, you know what's this, but H.G. Wells wrote War of the Worlds is kind of a comparison, like what if the Martians we're the British. Here we are marching into India.
We're basically
aliens.
We're the colonizers. From the perspective of colonizing.
And it would probably happen the same way and if you expanded,
It's fascinating. Okay, I'll say this. This is one of my favorite details, and then we'll move on with the show. Because we have to move on. We're already at over 30 minutes here. There's like spies and whatever from that they live in the belt and they grew up in outer space. You know, their bodies are 100% accustomed to the gravity adjustments that they've made, so they're not accustomed to 1G gravity here on Earth.
So when they come to Earth, they feel heavy.
Oh my God, Drew, to torture people, like the UN, now they're torturing people to get information out of them, spies, the people that think that are spies, and they are spies.
Yeah.
They just take them to like some dark basement where they have hooks on the walls and they just place their arms over the hooks. So that they're draped on the hooks, and then they just let gravity do the work. And then gravity's just, like, depressing them and dragging them down to the ground.
And they're just screaming in pain.
Not screaming in pain, but they're slowly dying. Gravity is crushing them. And then one guy, like, in episode 2 or 3, they're transporting him to a base, out of the atmosphere. So he's on the ship, and they have him in some sort of chair that's going to keep him upright so the G-forces don't kill him.
Yeah.
And he wiggles his neck out of the thing.
Snap!
And then he just crushes in his seats from the gravity.
So it's crazy.
So he suicides by gravity, by G-forces.
It's called The Expanse?
The Expanse, yeah.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting, very cool show. I've been eyeing it for a few years now. Like, oh, it looks kind of interesting. And I've seen some people say it's a good show. So fun. I'm just looking for something that I can, when I have a couple hours that I can relax, that I can just automatically put on without really having to think about it. That's why I watched seasons 1 through 4 of The Flash. Because it's just something easy to put on, and then it's playing on my phone.
What do you think of The Flash?
It's fine. It's like 50% of a good show, 50% of a bad show. I think their villains of the week are terrible. I think their season-long overriding villains are fantastic.
Okay.
The big villains are great. The small villains are fucking stupid.
Daredevil. Love the opening sequence.
I love the first season.
The first season's really good.
I love the entire first season.
And then he puts on that costume.
At the very, very end.
And it gets cut, yeah.
I gotta admit, and Drew doesn't like his ninja look.
I hate it.
Drew hates the ninja look. I actually thought that just the all-black ninja look was... I thought that was believable. Pretty cool. Yeah, believable. I thought it was cool.
That's what kills me about the movies, is when they put on the Dark Knight. I'm into it. Acting's great. Story's airtight. And then you see Christian Bale in the outfit.
Just as a bad
And he starts talking like this.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
I think the voice is worse than the costume. I actually like how in The Dark Knight... Well, Nolan did this, where he was like...
In the Dark Knight series, it's very, like, true to life. Like, what would it be like if Batman was in...
He had the access.
Like, yeah, to, like, the real world.
So they're like... I like how it's just tactical gear. It's just armor that we're repurposing, that we're adding bat symbols to. And then I like in the second movie where they make a point, he hands Morgan Freeman's character some designs, and he looks at it, he's like, oh, you want to be able to move your neck? He's like, yeah, that'd be nice. Because no Batman before, the head's always been attached to the cowl. And then it's so weird then when Zack Snyder goes back to... He makes his Batman. He's like, no, we're going back to head and cowl are attached. Yeah. Ben Affleck has to turn his entire body
to turn around.
It's insane to make that
Ben Affleck was horrible in that.
Not a Ben Affleck fan. Okay, noted.
I like him as a director.
Amazingly good director.
And I think he's as good as an actor as his director is.
Someone who was working on his Batman movie that's not getting made anymore said his Batman script was fantastic. But then at the same time, Ben Affleck was saying he didn't think the script was at a place where he wanted to be. That's why he kept pushing it off,
Probably shouldn't have been playing the character. Okay, you guys see the Killing Joke movie they made?
The animated one? I did see it. Yes. Okay. I was very disappointed by it.
Okay, you've got Brian Boland. I have that. When it came out.
Yeah. It was like, it's iconic for a reason.
Yeah, I know exactly.
It's amazing.
Dude, it's drawn and illustrated by Brian Boland.
Mm-hmm. And then the animation style they chose, I feel like, didn't honor
at all.
It was so cheap looking.
The iconic modern day Joker image with him grabbing his hair and the ha 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 in the background.
Yes. It's the cover. Yeah, well, no, the cover is the camera, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who was the studio exec who greenlit, let's just go ahead and animate this and cut the budget by half?
Yes, no! Exactly. Which is a shock because DC Animation, they know what they're doing. Most of their stuff is great. Their Flashpoint movie is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. They blew the
Killing Joke.
I think that these movies would be far... Okay, like the Green Lantern. If you did a series that was done in the style of Gil Kane, who was known for drawing Green Lantern.
Yeah, 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 sure.
Beautiful illustrator. Yeah.
Like, really honor the actual art that came first.
They could do it. They could do it. They don't even need to fully animate it, Chris. They could do, like, the motion comics like they do with the Watchmen stuff.
I love that.
I'm fine with that. Some people actually have trouble getting by that level, that style of animation.
I love...
I'm fine with motion comics.
Because then they...
At least it's the artwork.
They can stay true to the original artwork.
Yes. Yes.
Give props where props due. You get the original storyline.
And when they did that, they worked with Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
And Dave Gibbons would give his input on how things should move.
I bought that at Pathmark in New Jersey for $2.
Oh my God, Pathmark. I haven't heard that reference to Pathmark in years.
I love that, and I hated the movie.
Oh, really? I hated it. I love the movie.
I like the movie a lot.
The ultimate cut, which is actually available on Amazon Prime, where they put in all the deleted scenes with Night Owl 1, including him getting killed, and they input all the Tales of the Black Freighter stuff, so then you have the two Bernies, and and it actually completes the movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, and what was played in theaters was 100% an incomplete movie, which is wild. But yes, the motion comedy I will just put on Chapter 4 and watch the Dr. Manhattan story.
Over and over again.
Or the Ozymandias Chapter 8 or 9, that's Ozymandias telling his story. Yeah. I'll just watch those individually by themselves.
The score is beautiful.
It's a great score.
The way it opens with the spray paint kid going, do it.
Yeah, every episode. And then the guy that got to do the voiceover, all the actors.
The quotations at the beginning.
A brilliant use of the quotations, the titles of each.
Yes, and then they had the cadence of Alan Moore's writing. Yeah. Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
As the photograph falls to my feet. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, 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 100%. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's chapter 4. That's my favorite one.
Alan Moore.
It's also my favorite sequence of the movie. Yes. The 10-minute sequence that set the Philip Glass. You got to admit, Zack Snyder did that one right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Philip Glass. God, it was so good. That was really good. 10 minutes.
Alan Moore is one of these guys whose writing is so rich.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost like he's Edgar Allan Poe or like Charles Baudelaire when it comes to comic book writing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got this cadence.
I mean, come on. There's a reason why Watchmen hit that time 100, what was it, 100 best novels of the 90s?
Yeah.
Or the 1900s, I should say, of the 20th century.
I read it when it came out. It was over my head, but I knew it was brilliant.
Yeah, sure.
The icon of the smiley face with the blood going up it.
Yes, as it matches the doomsday clock as it's going towards
midnight. Yeah, man.
Yeah, dude. They're working on such a different level that was beyond what anyone could do. And then... it won what prize? It won the Hugo Prize, and then the Hugo Prize committee was like, okay, we're now changing this so that graphic novels cannot win sci-fi novel award.
That's stupid.
But wasn't it stupid as hell? Because Watchmen was so good, it had to be recognized for that level of achievement.
But don't you feel like the comic, like Batman, from back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
The comic book was way ahead of the TV show.
Yeah, sure.
I've never liked the movie with Jack Nicholson and
The 89. No.
I thought it was dumb when I saw it.
Yeah,
the comic books are deeper.
Yes,
so much.
They can be. There is that stretch in the 60s where they went childlike for a while.
It was like Sunday comic strips. Batman.
But when that movie came out in 89,
and then it changed over to future.
Had the Dark Knight was already out, and the Batman, the Occult, and the Killing Joke was already out.
Yeah, that's true. Frank Miller is already writing stuff, already reinventing the wheel with Batman and that iconography. So yeah, that stuff's always available too. But it's not the popular stuff though.
But obviously. I think that they have to dumb it down for mass audience.
Absolutely. You always have to dumb down. As a Jasmine, you should know the dumber stuff is what's popular.
Well, take Blade Runner. Not dumbed down.
Blade Runner 24? No, they try to honor Blade Runner and Blade Runner 24.
Take the original one.
Both of them.
Not dumbed down.
They did what they wanted to do, and then it did not find their audiences right away.
It did. Eventually.
That's what I'm saying. Eventually.
But that's fine.
Yeah. I think Blade Runner 2049 will find its audience just like the original did.
And people need... The executives need this instant gratification where I feel if they just let the movies... Okay, imagine going to a movie theater and seeing The Dark Knight, but it's animated by Frank Miller. Imagine sitting in a dark theater.
That would be great.
That would be amazing.
And artistically, it would be fantastic, but it's not going to make any money.
It will.
And it would make some, but not...
Yes, it will.
The Dark Knight level.
These people are in it for immediate gratification.
Just like you said.
Instant capitalism.
Yeah, just like you said.
But think about your European audiences, your world. It will. People would begin to... gravitate to it.
You gotta. I think it takes a while. You gotta change the hearts of people by eventually rolling these things out. Yeah, I mean, you can do it, but I don't know if it's immediately successful. That's the thing. Batman Begins itself was a successful movie on its own terms, based on following the failure of Batman and Robin, but it's still only made, quote, only made 350, 400 million worldwide. And then The Dark Knight, $800 million worldwide. That was a huge deal. Almost making $1 billion as the Batman movie. Actually, did it make $1 billion? It may have. I think The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises both cracked $1 billion worldwide, which is like an anomaly. And then when Justice League and Batman vs. Superman, neither of them break $1 billion right away, then it's a problem, you know.
Well, they've got too much. They need to give time between these movies, in my opinion.
I think that's true as well. Yeah, but I think they're cranking them out too fast. But that's the thing, though. They're seeing Marvel cranking out 2 to 3 a year, and those movies aren't suffering from the laws of diminishing returns. Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp, those movies are still making $400 or $500 million
How are the stories,
worldwide.
Though?
Pretty good.
They're on different levels, but they're still fine. Overall, they're still well reviewed. People still like them. Ant-Man and the Wasp, not as well liked as, like, say, a Black Panther. But it's been, I think, what, since Thor the Dark World was the last one that people were just like, nah, we don't like this one.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that was now 6 years ago?
That was their first misstep.
That was their
and
first
their last
big one,
too.
No, Iron Man 2, that was also kind of like muddled reviews. Incredible Hulk, actually, their Phase 2 stuff is a little more meh. Phase 3, they've actually been getting better, which is wild.
So I like writing and stories, but you know, like, that's why I'm a big fan of these, like, I think Netflix has saved, and I can go on this long story about Netflix ideas, but serializing them, giving the stories and the characters the respect they deserve, because I think the greatest adaptation has been Luke Cage.
I love
the fact that it's...
I love most of the first season. I love most of it.
It's story first, writing first, superpowers are secondary.
That's true.
And the story is airtight.
Yeah. Well, I also like how it's a timely character. It's a black man who's impervious to bullets in a time when it's like how many black men in our country are being gunned down without any justice. So, and I also bet you, too, another reason why you like Luke Cage. Be honest with me, Kyle. Yes. It's that Adrian Young score.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, hopefully I've got him on the hook for an interview.
Oh my, I will promote the hell out of that interview.
We've been playing back and forth for about a year now, so
please
we'll see what happens.
Please get him. Dude, I could ask him for 30 minutes just about Black Dynamite. Just What caused this cue? Why did you do that? How come I can't get this 30 seconds of music on any of your soundtracks? There's a moment in that scene, a Tommy Lee Jones chase sequence, where it chases through... No, the Chicago Wind car chase. And there's a music bit in there that's like 30 seconds, and I can't fucking find it on any of the soundtracks. It's not on the soundtracks. So I don't know what it is. I'm going to have to pull up the movie and Shazam that shit.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's a great...
Shazam.
I love Luke Cage. I just think it was... It's everything I wanted. Daredevil was good. I think his assistant was Stormy or Thirsty or what's his name?
What's Foggy?
Foggy Nelson. And the girl assistant. They need to be recast. They can't act.
Oh, damn.
You know. But Luke Cage brought everything together.
Well, first off, great actors. Mahershala Ali. A bummer that his character dies halfway through.
Oh, man.
What's her name?
He had to go on. He needed time to do True Detective Season 3.
That's true. He's doing True Detective. He's doing everything.
Have you seen the picture of him in that?
I don't think I have.
It's good. Looks good.
Great actor.
Luke Cage is great. I am a big fan of Luke Cage there.
Hey,
so.
Going back to Happy, how about the scene in the Chinese restaurant where they're fighting and they have the fryer oil? I'm like, he's going to batter
his
face. And he battered and deep fried his face.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
That's awesome. I got to say, though, that wouldn't be the first time I saw a body part battered and deep fried. There's a scene in Takashi Miike's. Dead Alive, I believe, where they're fighting in the kitchen, and some guy, he's looking for a weapon, like a knife or something to grab, so he's reaching down, he's just slamming his hand down without looking.
Hot oil.
So at first he puts his hand down in egg batter, then he puts his hand down in breadcrumbs, and then he puts his hand down in hot oil, and then he picks his hand up, and it's like completely battered and deep fried, but it's also, he put it in for like 2 seconds, and it comes out looking like perfectly like mozzarella sticks, you know,
nice.
It's hysterical. That's a... Leave it up to Takashi Miike to deep fry a hand.
Well, I mean, he deep fried a dude's back who was being hung from hooks.
That's true,
so.
Too. That's true. He didn't deep fry. He just kind of...
they poured hot oil on it.
Just poured hot
it.
Oil on it.
Yeah, it's deep frying.
Takashi Miike's great. All right, so that was your What You're Watching segment, which is practically a whole half of the show. But we're going to power through now with the box office recap. Drewster Cogburn! Let's talk about dollar bills real quick. Money, money, box office time. Where are we starting our top five?
Number five this week, Searching, made $4.5 million.
This John Cho movie, where it's like one of these, the whole movie takes place during a computer screen.
It's 92% it's a very well reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a very well-reviewed movie, so we're going to have to check it out when it plays on FXM one day.
Number four this week.
Number four.
The Meg made $6 million, total of $131.
I can't believe this movie made $130 million. No one likes it.
Yeah, well, it made $130 million.
What favorite shark movie, Kyle? Go.
Favorite what?
Favorite shark movie. Ooh. Go.
Oh, let's go with Orca, starring Richard Harris.
Already, you didn't say Jaws immediately, so I'm gonna boo you. Orca,
Chris,
is a fun movie. I do love Orca.
$360 million worldwide, $500 million.
That's that Chinese money.
Mm-hmm.
Orca is a ridiculous movie.
Yeah, Richard Harris has two voices, you know.
Funny, Richard Harris, his son, what's his name?
Noel Harris.
No, the one who's, because Richard Harris was the one who was the original Dumbledore, right? Who was original Dumbledore? His son plays Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes sequel.
Oh, I'm thinking a different guy. Yeah.
Are you thinking of a different guy? Is it a different guy?
I'm thinking of Rex Harrison, Noel Harrison.
Yes. Oh, okay. Richard Harris, you're right.
Richard Harrison. Yeah. So you're thinking of someone else, though. Okay.
No, it's the son. I'm thinking of Noel Harrison.
Noel Harrison.
Yeah, Richard. I don't know who Richard Harris's kid is.
His son, who was Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes show, is like the leader of the Belter Resistance. In The Expanse, so they're just trying to.
I want to check this movie out, man. Squee, like, so, what do you think about Buckaroo Banzai?
Man, I just started, like, I pulled up Buckaroo Banzai on Amazon Prime the other day, just sort of rewatch it a little bit. I don't think enough people know about
it's a good flick.
If you didn't warn anyone about Buckaroo Banzai, and then you showed them the opening crawl, what it says, the setup of the movie, Drew. Look up opening crawl.
Can we get to the box office mojo? Top five first.
All right, so just real quick. Yeah, go ahead. What do you got? Right.
Number three this week, Peppermint, $13.2 million.
Pull up the Rotten Tomatoes on that.
No, the Rotten Tomatoes is 13%.
Well, what was the consensus on Peppermint?
Cool title.
Far from refreshing, Peppermint wastes strong work from Jennifer Garner on a dreary vigilante revenge story that lacks unique twists or visceral thrills.
It's Pierre Morel, the French director, protege of Luc Besson, who did Taken. And those type of movies. It's Lady Taken, and the trailer was okay, but apparently it's very poorly reviewed. It's Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend and the weekend after Labor Day are the two worst weekends of the year. And then Super Bowl weekend, three worst weekends of the year for going to see a movie.
Jennifer Garner, I think she's best served when she did, like, the movie Dallas Buyers Club.
Yes, yeah.
She's so believable.
And
she has the ability to be like a very much like a what's her name, Lena or Laura Linney, a Sally Field,
a Laura Dern.
Yeah,
she can.
She's believable.
Yeah, I like her.
I think when she makes these other movies, it's like, dude, you're not meant for action, man.
Yeah, but
she did that show,
and she does those Capital One commercials too.
She's believable in. But she did Alias, right?
Yeah.
I hated that show. Yeah. I thought it was garbage.
Yeah, that's the basis for her. And also Elektra, which no one likes.
Yeah, that movie sucked too. But yeah, she's so much better than the sum of her parts than when it comes to her.
I do. And you know what also? Well, maybe we'll talk about this in the second half real quick. But she's also there for Ben Affleck, thick and thin, no matter what, as he goes to rehab again for the kids.
Number two this week.
It's all about the kids, Drew.
The Crazy Rich Asians made $13.6 million, making them even crazier and even richer. For a total of $136 domestic and $28 foreign. Only $164 worldwide total.
I want to see this. I'm going to see it. It's going to happen.
I don't care.
You don't care about the crazy?
Don't care about
how crazy and rich they are?
I also don't care about
There's a wedding.
I also don't care about the number one movie, Chris. The Nun. That made $53.5 million on a budget of 22.
I will say, though, it's finally someone started to talk about the horrors of the Catholic Church. No offense, I know you're Catholic, but hey.
I ain't no Catholic. I actually grew up Protestant.
Are you a Protestant?
I'm Reformed Catholic.
He's Reformed Catholic. I grew up Protestant. Well, I'm currently...
So you and like one other Puerto Rican dude are Protestant, I think, right?
No, actually, there's a very strong Protestant community in Puerto Rico. My grandfather like founded a few churches himself, one in Hollywood, Florida, one in Puerto Rico, one in Brooklyn. My aunt was a pastor. officer in Puerto Rico. So
I'm the only Italian Greek that never went Catholic and never went Orthodox.
That's rough.
Never.
But he still went to Greek Fest though, growing up, right?
Well, for the spinach pies and the octopus, you know, it was good. I'm not a fool, you know.
There you go.
See it.
That's very funny. I am trying to pull up this Buckaroo Banzai, the opening, guys. This crawl, Drew. If I read this to you,
dude, Peter Weller, think about his early career. Buckaroo Banzai,
yep.
RoboCop,
yeah,
weird stuff. Naked Lunch,
yeah,
Naked Lunch. And then David Cronenberg at his weirdest.
And then great sci-fi flicks.
Yep. And then he went on to be a doctorate in archaeology.
Yeah. And religion, yeah. He's a talking head in a lot of documentaries.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome when RoboCop's sitting there telling me about the Great Pyramid of Giza. Yeah. I'm like, yes, RoboCop, whatever you say.
You can, if you go to YouTube and search Peter Weller, like speech or whatever, or lecture, you'll find a lot of good videos of him speaking to people about both about movies and cinema and is it archaeology, paleontology? Yeah. What is he into?
Archaeology.
Yeah. And he's just a brilliant man. Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9 and Elysium.
Yeah. I love
he's District doing 9. He's doing the RoboCop sequel, a sequel to the original film, and someone on Twitter tagged him and was like, I'm excited about the RoboCop sequel by Neil Blomkamp, but I'm wondering, who is he going to get to play RoboCop this time? Neil himself, or who should play RoboCop? Neil himself responded to the dude and said, Peter Weller. Two words, Peter Weller. So he wants Peter Weller to come back to play Alex
So
Murphy.
Do I.
Have you watched RoboCop lately?
I own it on the Criterion. Yeah.
Tell me that movie's not scarily prescient.
Especially with privatization.
The whole everything. Yeah.
Capitalism, Old Detroit, New Detroit, all that shit.
Yeah. The Hummer is basically that car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What the Hummer became.
Access to high-powered weapons, citizenry.
It's crazy.
That's the thing with satires. When satires are done right, 10, 15, 20 years
they
later,
become
they just become this is just
sci-fi is the ultimate satire. Again, H.G. Wells was talking about the Martians as we're the
colonizers. Yeah,
the British.
We're saying. Yeah, 100%.
Dude, I have this saying, if it happened in the Twilight Zone, don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, sci-fi is so well served as a mirror. You know, Ray Bradbury did not like the title science fiction. He liked speculative fiction.
Oh, that's good. Speculative fiction. That's exactly the phrase I do.
And I think that's apropos as well, but I do think, you know, like,
just because it's not happening now doesn't mean it can happen. Yeah, that's why when you watch 2001 A Space Odyssey, movie made in the 60s, you're using tablets.
Yep. Which Chris has in his hand
right now. We got a tablet. It's a little smaller than theirs, but man, I think their picture quality was better.
It looks cooler, yeah.
You know that movie was not based on an Arthur C. Clarke book?
No, they wrote it. They wrote it together.
Yes.
Yeah. They wrote it together. Because I wrote, if you go to chriscrespo.com, there's a link there that says book to film adaptations. I wrote a short series comparing books to movies. So I did a deep dive on 2001, read the book, rewatched the movie, wrote a whole thing, and I was like, I was fascinated to see that they co-wrote it together.
Together.
So when people watch the movie and they don't understand the Space Baby ending, I say just read the last couple chapters of 2001. All the information is in there. Everything that you're missing from the movie you think is missing, it's in there. So there's more details in the book that aren't in the movie. Like, the satellites are all nuclear weapon satellites, but Kubrick wanted to cut out any references to nuclear weapons because Dr. Strangelove had just come out and was a huge hit. And he was like, I don't want to be known as the nuclear weapon director. So he downplayed the whole nuclear weapon thing in 2001.
Yeah, the sequel is actually underrated, in my
opinion. 2010. Yeah. Who directed that?
Roy Scheider was in it.
It was the guy who did... He did that, but then one of his last movies is A Sound of Thunder with Ed Burns, which is a terrible sci-fi film that they ran out of money for to finish, and then the producers just put it out anyway. It's not good. But it's so not good that it's fun to watch. Albert Pune.
P-U-G-N?
P-U-U-N?
P-Y-U-N?
The guy who did Cyborg.
Ringing a bell,
I think it's the same guy who did the Van Damme movie Cyborg. Yeah. I think. I'm not sure. Anyway. New movies come out on DVD. We have Ocean's 8. That was a fun film.
Fun.
People want to check that out. Enough. The Superfly remake, which was not well reviewed.
Didn't look like it, yeah.
And a good movie I saw at the Florida Film Festival, music-centric movie, Hearts Beat Loud, with Nick Offerman.
Oh, yeah.
Comes out on DVD, home video, streaming services this week, so people should check that one out, Hearts Beat Loud. You might like that one. It's very music-centric.
What's he playing?
He plays a guitar, and what it is, he's playing, well, the movie's playing a guitar, and this character is a record shop owner in Brooklyn, and his daughter's getting ready to go to college, and they're sort of like having some relationship issues, but they also, they have a thing where they play music together, and then they write a song, and then he puts out online, and it gets popular.
Oh, okay.
And so he's trying to convince his daughter, hey, be in the band with me, and she's like, Dad, I'm moving away to college. So it's this whole thing about their relationship. It's a really nice, touching, good movie,
yeah.
And it's got good music in it. Drew,
Nick Offerman.
Definitely. Nick Offerman, I like, I'm a big fan. Who doesn't like Nick Offerman?
And he's carrying the tradition of the stash.
Yes. He's a facial hairman for sure.
Speaking of Burt Reynolds,
yeah.
The stash.
In this movie, I think he's more of a beard man, but anyone who rocks facial hair, I'm all for. Speaking of facial hair, Drew, our goatee man, what's come out in theaters?
Oh, White Boy Rick comes out this weekend.
This looks good. We've only seen the trailer, 200
billion times?
So yeah, we're ready for this one. Matthew McConaughey, fantastic. What else we got?
A Simple Favor.
That's the Paul Feig,
weird,
yeah,
kind of creepy whodunit. Is she gone?
It's like, I want to say it's like a 60s, 70s style whodunit.
Yeah.
And even reflected in the marketing where they do all this like Saul Bass style
typography. Well, yeah, and even the characters like talking to you like, I don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it's a lot. It looks like a noir type of thing. But it's Paul Feig, known for
comedy.
Yeah, you just said Saul Bass, man.
Oh, Saul Bass. I mean, come on. Iconic,
psycho,
you know.
Psycho credits.
Yeah, I mean,
Charade.
The Vertigo poster that we were talking about, even though that. What else you got, Drew?
And last, maybe least, Chris.
Maybe least.
The Predator.
The Predator comes out this weekend. We're going to talk about this in the second half of the show. So, also, according to my research, this may be a limited release. Mandy comes out this weekend.
That
Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh, okay, no, it's not. Alamo Drafthouse is doing a special release this weekend. We could go see it at the Waterford Lakes on like a Thursday night.
If we wanted to see it early,
yeah,
we may have to look
into
that.
But it comes out. It comes out the 14th nationwide.
Okay, so that's this week.
So maybe only limited. Maybe only limited this week. We might not get it but it's playing Thursday at Waterford Lakes.
Thursday at Waterford. All right, Mandy. Yeah. If you want to see it, an interesting trailer. Yes, Nick Cage. Panos Cosmatos, the son of George P. Cosmatos. He did one other movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow, and then he did this movie.
That's a wacky movie.
It's a wacky movie, but the story isn't great. This one played at some film festivals and got rave reviews.
Yeah, Nick Cage is one of these guys where if he told me the movie sucked, I believe it.
Sure.
If he told me, oh, it's great, I believe it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nick Cage... He seems to have no barometer. He'll do anything. He'll find something that he wants to do, and then he'll
do it.
Jump into it.
Well,
it could be terrible, or it could be great.
Matchstick Man was great in A Sea of Crap.
That's a Gore Verbinski film.
And then what's the one about the guy
going
to
Pakistan?
No,
it's Scott. Tony Scott. Which one?
The guy going to Pakistan.
Oh, the one where, he's a one-man army.
Yeah, that's a great film.
And then, actually, was it called One Man Army? And then the Bad Lieutenant remake, or sequel with Werner Herzog.
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
He did a David Gordon Green movie called Joe, which is really good.
Yeah, that was.
But then he also does, like,
Sorcerer's
Apprentice, a National Treasure.
Ghost Rider.
Yes, plenty of those.
But
actually,
the second Ghost Rider is good.
I will stick up for Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Mm-hmm. It should have been an R-rated movie. That aside, I will stand up. The creativity of that one is really good. Plus, he gives a gonzo performance.
Did you ever see his directorial debut, Sonny?
With James Franco? No, I didn't see that one. Yeah, I did not see
that. Touching.
That was from like 2004, 2005. Yeah.
Touching character study.
Wasn't he playing sort of a James Dean type James Franco?
No, he
going
plays
on
a
Dean Franco.
He plays the son of a kind of a shady madam.
Oh, okay.
And she raises him to be a stud.
A shady madam, as opposed to an up
and
up
madam.
And Nick Cage runs a brothel.
He's in it too. Okay.
Yeah, he's.
Does he do a Humphrey Bogart impression? He's been doing that lately. He's done at least two movies now where he does the Humphrey Bogart impression.
It's a good flick, and what's her face? Mina Savari's in it.
Oh, nice.
I haven't seen her in a while.
It's because Weinstein effectively blackballed her.
It's so touching. It's got some... I mean, it's a dark story, but it's like...
Sonny, yeah. It's S-O-N-N-Y is
the person's
name.
I bought that once on Amazon.
Yeah.
And the guy sent me 8 copies of it.
Wow.
I bought it for $1.
Yeah. Well, he must have had a big stock of it.
He goes, I can't move these. So I gave them out to people.
Nice.
And they go, hey, you know, people, hey, this is actually a really good movie.
Yeah.
You know, here you go.
So many movies get made, it's hard for them to all break through. So that's very cool. All right, so that's what's come out in theaters. All right, Dr. Drew, time for you to tell us what is our prescription for life as I take the last sip of the last bit of this, what are we calling it? Prune Jack?
Prune Jack. Thank from you. The...
Prune Jack, sir.
Warner from the Warren's Reserve.
Warren's Reserve.
33rd Street. From the 33rd and John Young.
There we go.
Orange County's finest.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
They call me Dr. Manhattan.
And Bridget Fonda.
Do doctors know more about sex?
Doc Hollywood.
That's right. Here he is with your prescription for life is Dr. Drew himself. Dr. Drew, take it away.
Kill your masters. Cogburn out.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
Oh.
That reminds me of a...
That's for the masters.
Nice. They don't deserve it. You're supposed to kill your masters.
Okay, we need...
We need a film director, legendary, extraordinaire, Louis Buñuel always said, bite the hand that feeds you.
Yes, yeah. bite it hard. Yeah. Burn all the bridges, yeah. Close all the doors.
Nuke the bridges.
Nuke the bridges, burn the doors, and then, but not the doors of the band, because I like them.
And kill your masters.
But most importantly, kill your masters, no more heroes. We need to take a break. I need to refill my beverage here. Drew, I'm sure you want to smoke a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusting. And then we're going to do the second half of the show.
All right.
So, everyone, stay tuned, listen to this little break, and then we'll be right back with more Cinema Crespediso.
How will they change? Getting small. It's as easy.
Yes, I like that. The one thing I like about that, I like that it's beans,
coffee beans. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's cute
because you're buying beans so that you could possibly flick a bean.
Flick. I'm gonna flick that bean.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you'd be like, I'm gonna flick that bean. I'm gonna flick that bean. Baby. I'm gonna flick that bean. I'm gonna flick that bean, baby.
I'm flicking your bean, baby.
Flicking your bean, flicking up.
Hashtag me too.
Flick the bean, oh yeah. Flick the bean, baby. I'll make you feel like
flick my bean, oh flick my bean, yeah, baby, flick my bean. Tell me how you flick my bean. Flick my bean, flick my bean, flick my bean, yeah, baby, I like beans, I like kidney beans, black beans, white beans, and the sauce straight up the canyon, the pressure cooker going off. Now you the man, flick my bean.
I like it.
Welcome to the Questo Game.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. And I was going to hit the right button. Yes, I did. All right, here we go. It is the second half of 296. I am chilling with Drew Sikagringer.
What up?
And Kyle Eagle Cop.
Hello.
All right, first, Drew, where can people find you on the very few places online that you're available?
At Antihero 419, three places on the internet.
Those three places are?
Facebook, Instagram, Xbox Live.
That's it. Get on them now, because pretty soon even those will be gone.
As soon as possible.
Of course, there's always the unofficial fan parody love Twitter account.
How's that going?
At Drew Sikagra. And I don't know, let me pull it up here. It has like 20 followers, I think.
That's awesome.
Someone's actually tweeting from it now.
That's cool. They can have as much fun with my online persona as they wish.
Drew, you have...
I do not care.
I don't have a fan account. You have a fan account.
Yes, I do.
How come I don't have a fan account?
Nobody loves you, Chris.
It doesn't make any sense. It's my show. You have 16 followers.
Yes.
On your fan account.
Sweet.
Ooh. Ooh, that last 18 hours later, still can't animate is what the last... Oh, here we go. This is a weird tweet. I'll go ahead and show you this tweet. It's, I'm getting that weird split screen thing. Yeah, actually, yeah. I can't show it. My phone okay. sucks. I hate this phone. Ladies and gentlemen, stay away from LG products. They are terrible. Kyle.
Yes.
First, if you want people to follow you online, if you do, where can they do that?
Well, it's basically if you have my email address, or if you have a can with a string attached to it.
Just pick up the can
and say... smoke signals work.
You go, do I have a... I have the can effect. Where's my can effect? You go,
hello, Kyle.
Yes.
Are you there, Kyle?
Yes.
I need jazz recommendations.
Okay. Facebook, Kyle Eagle Facebook.
Kyle Eagle.
I guess we get the major scale coming out on Wednesday.
Yes.
And we got, I do more Q than A at the gallery, Rogers Keeney Building.
Which is your, how often do you do more Q than A?
More Q than A is doing it once a month. We're doing it twice a month, and we're going to be back in a couple of weeks with Head, the Monkees film.
Yeah, yeah.
Our most requested film.
Really?
Since we started the program back in early 2016, we have gotten more requests for that movie.
Fascinating. And what's the format for the night? What do you do? When people show up, what can they expect from the more cute than they
Well, you walk in, it's in the art gallery, so downstairs is an exhibit going on.
Yeah.
And then we have beer and wine, mm-hmm. and maybe I'll bring in a bag of popcorn or something.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
And then we go upstairs where there's a movie theater,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to show this movie, and we talk about it. And then when downstairs, we'll go back downstairs, hang out, talk more, and usually we go next door to the Harp and Celt.
Yeah, there you go.
Where the real Q&A really kind of begins.
The real fun begins.
I will say, these guys... At the Harp and Celt, you walk in, and I drink bourbon.
Yeah,
Josh drinks Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Green drinks Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
We walk in.
There we go.
We get our table. They come to the table with our drinks.
They know.
Yeah, they know already.
Always nice.
That's a class act, man.
Always nice when that happens.
Yeah,
yeah.
I used to have that happen to me at my normal watering holes back in my drinking days in my 20s.
It is nice when it happens. For a while, I would go to the Copper Rocket up here up the road, I would sit down and be like, here is your OBP squared. I'd be like, yay, I'm getting drunk tonight. But then they change over to the owners, and the bartender isn't there anymore, and they don't even have OBB squared on tap anymore.
No, they had some troubles at Copper Rocket.
They had some troubles, but the new owners there are doing great. It's the same people who own all the Foxtail coffees in town, and ATK Entertainment was a t-shirt company, and they're doing perfectly fine over
there. Good, that other guy needed to go.
He was terrible. He was so bad when they did the bar rescue episode.
Yeah.
The title of the episode, the guy's name is Salmon. The title of the episode is A Crazy Thing Named Salmon.
Yeah, he was a square peg in a circle.
It was pretty wild. Shout out, to the previous owners, the Pfnounf family. I don't know how to say their last name. They did the $2 deep fried cheeseburgers.
Mm, those are delicious.
Oh, my God. Those are good.
I always wondered if you could deep fry a cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah.
They did. They would wrap the patty in tinfoil and then drop the whole thing in the deep fryer to cook it. And then pull out, throw some onions on that thing. It was perfectly cooked and moist. And
they couldn't just bread the thing?
No, they didn't bread it. You could do that. You could bread it. And then you can have a country fried cheeseburger.
No.
Drew, I'm cutting this out. It's going to be a snack shack. Country fried cheeseburgers. We're doing them.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. The major scale, like we already said at the top of the show, you just mentioned now, is available on PFT as of Wednesday the 12th. And of course, people will be hearing the show in perpetuity. So many of you, the show will be out by now. Check it out. The first episode debuting on our network is the Kamasi Washington Grace Kelly episode.
And not the Grace Kelly from Catch a Thief.
No, the Grace Kelly from the...
Stephen Colbert Group.
The Stay Human?
Stay Human Band. Stephen Colbert. She's got green hair.
Yeah.
She does stuff like... she'll show up... Okay, when that movie Battle of the Sexes came out...
Yes.
She went to a tennis court...
Yes.
Dressed as Billie Jean King...
Yeah.
With her partner in crime, Lee Pellegrino, as... I forget his name.
The misogynist douchebag.
Yeah. And they played saxophone across the net...
Yeah, as if they were doing a tennis match. Going back and forth.
And you can see the people of the country like, what the hell's going on here?
That's funny.
But yeah, she brings a sense of absurdity. But, anyway, the show is... there's a renaissance going on in jazz and creative music. And,
Well, that's the point of the show. Yeah, is that a lot of people hear jazz and they think... you know, old Miles Davis, John Coltrane, they think 50s, 60s, 70s, or maybe even they'll just think cheesy piano jazz in a lounge or something.
Or smooth jazz smooth in the elevators.
Yeah. Which I have nothing against Spyro Gyro, but maybe that's just what people think. Kenny G would be the first thing they think of. And
there are hand gestures invented for Kenny G, I'm sure.
There are specific hand gestures, yes. Kenny G has a sense of humor about himself, though. So I'm willing to give him, I'll let him slide, you know.
He should.
But the whole point of the show, the major scale, which is why you're interviewing people from Kendrick Lamar's band, because there is great jazz music happening now, modern music that's great and that younger audiences should appreciate, and it's out there.
Well, it's funny. I was in a cab going to the airport, and an Uber guy, and he had Kamasi Washington on.
Awesome, very cool. Yeah,
and I said, hey, look, I just did an interview with him, and you see, it's interesting too. Like, you go to like Park Ave Discs, and you see these kids. You know, they turn me on to Bad Bad Not Good.
Yeah, great. I love Bad Bad Not Good. They're so good.
And they did a great Gangstar cover.
Oh, really?
Where they take a riff from a Gangstar sample and riff on the. You know, it's going full circle. But meeting some of these cats, man, these guys, like the music is it's really going places. Mm-hmm. And Kendrick Lamar, if you don't know that, like he's Grammy winning, Pulitzer Prize winning, but his band is the greatest band in the world right now.
He has the clout to be able to put together like the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is the Miles Davis of today in terms of putting together
the band
like,
leader,
a stage band. Yes,
I'm telling you, he has the. And I've talked to guys like Herbie Hancock, and they're like, yeah, he probably does.
Yeah,
you know,
they are like when you give them the rundown, like those are the best people working today.
Like if you went back to Miles Davis back in Bitches Brew, and you're like. So you've got Chick Corea as a sideman?
Yes, exactly.
You
know,
no shit. You got John McLaughlin as a side guy.
Exactly. Okay. I mean, so just like in the same way Miles Davis, like, quote, discovered John Coltrane, you know, like, I'm working with this guy. Have you guys heard this John Coltrane cat? He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar is doing the same thing. He's like, have you guys heard of this Kamasi Washington guy? He's pretty good.
We've got three of those guys on our show.
Go ahead and tell Drew your plan. I think this is a brilliant plan.
Okay, so we've got, on this upcoming season, we've got Kamasi Washington, Joseph Lineberg, and Thundercat.
All three of those, part of Kendrick Lamar's band.
Yeah. My goal is to get the entire band together.
Yes.
Interview them all, and eventually interview Kendrick Lamar
himself, yeah.
How does it feel to have
the best band in the world?
possibly not unprecedented since Bitches Brew.
Do you think, maybe you know more, do you think Kendrick Lamar runs his band like James Brown did? Like, oh, you were, drummer, you're off by, your tempo was like half a beat off. I'm fining you $500.
Maybe, who knows?
Is he a brutal taskmaster?
From what I've heard is that he's been in the game a while, and he's always admired it. Because, actually, Joseph Lineberg came up producing a guy named Micah Nine, who was a kind of a ghostwriter for NWA.
Yeah.
Never really quite made it.
Okay.
So he saw these guys, and he put them together. So when he got a contract for being hot and hip, he pulled these guys into the thing.
Yeah.
He's got the good taste.
Yeah.
He's kind of like...
it's important. Having the right taste is very important. Yeah.
He's got the good taste to... He's like George Clooney.
Clooney has great taste.
He knows who to pull, like, you know...
Yeah.
This cinematographer.
Yeah. I need this guy. This I need writer. That guy.
This is the style that's in vogue.
This guy.
Yes. Right, this is the story that's relevant.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Or, yeah, he's got the style and the taste to put it together. You know.
He knows
what's going to be a hit. Because, I'm not a real big fan of Kamasi's popular songs, but the deep tracks are really
the ones where he's not necessarily trying to get mainstream and pull
they're
those
progressive.
Offices. Yeah.
They're really progressive.
I think people who like prog rock are the same people who like jazz, because you're interested in hearing the journey of a song. I like how in This Is Spinal Tap, it's a joke where they lose their guitarist, Christopher Guest character, they lose him. So they're going to do the performance that's essentially at like a SeaWorld. And they're like, what do we do?
Oh, yeah.
And Derek, the bassist, goes, Jazz Odyssey. with the new Spinal Tap, and it's Jazz Odyssey. People are like, boo! And they're booing him because it's just like jazz exploration without any structure or anything.
A jazz rock version.
Yeah, exactly. The Spinal Tap. You need the Spinal Tap. What are you going to do?
But you know, all these guys are into that kind of psychedelic music. Out of all the newer school cats that I've interviewed, I say cats got some antiquated terms.
Because you're a hip dude.
You're a jazz man.
But these guys, all the consistent tissue, connective tissue, They all mention hip-hop.
Oh, Kyle, I'm sorry. That's on me. It's time for Juice the Guy World vs. the World.
Juice the Guy World vs. the World. Juice the Guy vs. the World.
Go ahead and finish your thought. You're in the middle of a thought. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, it's the hip-hop and prog rock.
They're connected.
They all talk about it.
Yeah, I mean...
I interviewed Kyle Eastwood, and he mentioned he loves Pink Floyd.
Oh, really? Yeah?
Tommy Guerrero. Oh, well, you know, I really love, like, Bad Brains and Pink Floyd and Public Enemy.
That's funny.
That's the new school jazz influence.
That's what they grew up with. Makes sense. And that's that was the interesting progressive anti-mainstream stuff of the day. Yeah. In the 80s, you could listen to Cyndi Lauper, which is fine, or you could listen to Bad Brains / Soul Brains. You know, you could go that way.
Thundercat used to be in Suicidal Tendencies.
Really?
Yeah.
That I did not know.
He still plays with his brother. Plays with him.
With Suicidal Tendencies?
Yeah.
Wait, they're still playing? I did not know that. I didn't know Suicidal Tendencies was still out there. I thought they did that one song where he's like, "Ma, I just wanted the Pepsi," and then they broke up.
and that was it.
Remember that one song?
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna do some trivia game. Kyle, what we do every week when we have a guest, the guest represents the world, and Drewster Cogburn represents Drewster Cogburn. So this year, we've had so far 34 guests so far this year.
Something like that.
No, actually, exactly like that. Because I'm looking at your score. Yeah. We've had 34 guests. Drew has a record of 22-12.
Not bad.
So a pretty good record. This week's game is called Musicals. Okay. Not Musicals. I'm going to name a movie. You tell me the focus of the movie. I have a couple examples to help you out here. So, for example, if I said something like Mamma Mia, the musical focus is ABBA. Mamma Mia is all based on ABBA songs, okay?
Okay.
Or if I said something like Jersey Boys, that's a Frankie Valli Four Seasons biopic based on the play, right?
I am going to get all of these wrong.
Oh, you'd be surprised, Drew. I mean, I try to find some obvious examples to start each group. So I have two groups of five, A and B. Drew, you won last week. So you go first. You want Group A or Group B? Choose wisely. Group A. Drew, name the focus of this movie. You'll understand right away. Number one, Walk the Line.
Well, it was like a Johnny Cash thing.
That is Johnny Cash. That is correct. Number two, Some Kind of Monster.
Some kind of monster. Oh, that was Metallica documentary.
That's correct. Well done. Number three, Sid and Nancy.
And it's Sid Vicious, but I don't know the.
Oh, come on. You know it's Sid Vicious, but you can't think of the band?
Yeah, I'm having problems with that right now.
That's what happens when you're in the hot seat, which you are every week. That seat's all burned up from the heat. I'm going to give you a few seconds here.
Nope.
No. The Sex Pistols.
There we go.
Number four, I'm Not There.
Oh, that was the Bob Dylan.
That is correct. And finally, number five, Love and Mercy.
No idea.
Do you have any idea on this one, Love and Mercy?
Brian Wilson.
That is Brian Wilson. Oh. Yes, that's when Paul Dano. Yeah, he plays young Brian Wilson and John Cusack plays older. Okay, so you got 3 out of 5 on that one. Not bad. Not bad at all. Okay, Kyle, here we go. Number one, Straight Outta Compton.
N.W.A.
That's correct. Number two, Get On Up.
James Brown.
That's correct. Number three. He's so good. Yeah. Although...
That's where I learned to dance.
We gotta move on. Number three, Across the Universe.
The Beatles.
That is correct. Number four, La Bamba.
Richie Valens.
That is correct. And number five, Control.
Joy Division.
That is correct. Running the table, 5 out of 5. Kyle Damn. Eagle laying it down. Good job, sir.
Laying the smack down.
Good job. I will say this. Drew Zuckerberg and everyone listening, Kyle was our guest on the Simon Time Trivia Show, Empathy 4. Mm. And we did 15 questions, all music questions.
Got them all right.
One.
I'm not going to say all right, but he crushed it. So people listen to the Simon Time Trivia Show, episode 54, to hear that depth of knowledge. Well done. Good job. Nice. 22-13 is your record. Still a great record, but Kyle killed it 5 out of 5. So at a major scale, people listen to it. Kyle Eagle on Facebook. Does the major scale? Do we have a presence already on like Instagram and stuff like that?
We got one on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook page. Okay,
yeah, working on it. I got a.
I would suggest starting a group. I got a group.
Hey, also besides the new school guys I'm working on, mm-hmm. I'm also trying to mix it with classics. So we have guys like Sonny Rollins on there. We've done Herbie Hancock.
Love Sonny Rollins.
We've got Ahmad Jamal.
I was going to say Herbie Hancock, right? Yeah, so it's not just new stuff.
Yeah,
no, it's also appreciating the stuff that's come before.
I want to mix the old with the new, because there's people who are like, you know, like Jamie Branch.
Mm-hmm.
She's in her 20s, and she's doing these incredible melodic, mm-hmm. amazing tunes.
Yeah.
And then we partner her up with a bit about the Williamsburg Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And a big movement to change the name to the Sonny Rollins Bridge. If you ever watched The Simpsons, she plays on that bridge at night.
Oh, yeah.
That's
homage
to Sonny Rollins.
Is that really a Sonny Rollins thing? That's cool.
A very much Sonny Rollins
thing. That's so funny. I've seen that episode. It's a Bleeding Gums Murphy when Bleeding Gums Murphy dies. And she's playing and sees him in the stars. I had no idea it was a Sonny Rollins connection there.
We're also doing a Tom Scott tribute. We play Tom Scott's like mostly known for like smooth jazz. I should say smooth jazz.
People do think something very specifically. They think a Kenny G style when they think smooth jazz.
He did Starsky and Hutch. He did like, let's do it again.
That's very 70s style. Yeah. kind of funky jazz.
And he worked with Joni Mitchell for a long time.
Okay, yeah.
But his early work is where like Pete Rock and Seal smooth sampled, Hieroglyphics, mm-hmm. Massive Attack.
Love Massive Attack, yeah.
They sampled him to... beautiful, beautiful, beautiful use of his work. And his early work is just so incredible. And it's not that well, it's mostly it's out of print. Or it's available in Japan for like $400 for a CD.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's incredible music. And think about when we were interviewing him, I found out he was still in high school when he recorded the track that became the backbone of Pete Rock and CL Smith's classic They Reminisce Over You. He was in high school. Valedictorian as well.
That's wild.
On Impulse Records.
That reminds me of how, and you're going to laugh at this, but it's similar, Will Smith. Will Smith would talk about how he was 17 years old, he was at his own high school prom, and they play, the DJ starts playing, parents just don't understand.
That's awesome.
Yeah. His own hit is playing at his high school prom when he's 17 years old.
I'm a big fan of Will Smith. I think he's a part of the solution.
I grew up with Will Smith. Yeah. I mean, we're all similar ages here. So, I mean, I grew up watching him on TV. His music is very poppy and cheesy, but it's listenable.
Yeah, he's super cool.
Yeah, the Scientology stuff, I don't know about it. He doesn't embrace it publicly, but then he makes a movie like After Earth, which is all about suppressing your emotions.
I was about to say.
And it's like 100% based on Dianetics.
And have you seen his children? Because they are weird.
His children are weird.
Well, you know,
fuck.
Didn't he do Fresh Prince? And he kind of like, I need this show to be a hit, because I'm one of the IRS.
Oh, he knows what he's doing. I think Will Smith has always been a very smart, ahead-of-the-game guy. Which is why he's been culturally relevant for now. 70 years.
And Jazzy Jeff is very still well respected.
Still very accomplished. People may
relevant.
He may not amazing be on TV, producer. But he still is going out there commanding huge money for what he does, which is amazing. I'm a big
His New Eurekan Soul Jeff records are dope. Oh,
I didn't know he does New Eurekan Soul records, really?
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. That's like really cool.
The whole package is legit.
That's the thing. So he plays a very goofy character on Fresh Prince, so people automatically assume Jazzy...
That's playing
a guy named Jazz. Like, he's just playing him.
They're
he's
legit.
Really a smart,
the whole thing
dude.
Is legit. Everything funny. About those guys is for real.
I'm a huge fan, so there we go. So the major scale, people, follow it, listen to it. You're going to love it. It's fantastic. We're super excited to have him on board. And then, of course, you know all the Cinema Crispy, so contact stuff. We've been doing this for almost 300 episodes now. Drew.
Chris.
Let's get started. We have our friend in New York, Kyle, is our homie Billy D. He's our horror film expert, as well as our New York City senior correspondent. He hits us up every week. Nice. We have a segment called Billy D's Death of the Movies, and here is the intro.
Heavy. There's that word again. Heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
What? Dude, we're totally gonna kill you now.
There you go. One of my most favorite pieces of production I've ever done. Billy D's intro, mixing up three different songs with two Bill and Ted drops.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Good job, Chris.
I'm a huge talent. Drew Sakai, we're taking it away.
What is up, my dudes? I've had a pretty busy weekend building stuff for the apartment.
Oh, building. I get it.
Editing, going for a photo walk, seeing a punk show, and watching season 2 of Iron Fist.
Oh, season 2 of Iron Fist. He actually... It's so funny you brought up Daredevil. Like, so we love Daredevil, Drew and I. We both followed all the way up to Luke Cage. Iron Fist, we both fell off.
And then everything since then.
The Defenders, Punisher.
Haven't watched
Daredevil season 3, Jessica Jones season 2. I've skipped out on all of it. Anyway, go ahead, Drew.
It was an improvement on season 1, that's for sure. Okay. And it ends in a really shocking way.
I will say this. I'll go ahead and spoil this for people because I don't give a shit about Marvel Netflix spoilers. A big deal made about how Iron Fist is a white guy.
Yeah.
And they perpetuated that, the Danny Rand thing. Mm-hmm. Iron Fist season 2 ends with the Asian lady character on the show inheriting the title of Iron Fist. So now Iron Fist is an Asian lady as opposed to a white dude. So, hey, hashtag me too.
There is still room for improvement with the fighting, but the story and acting got much better this time around. Back to my project, stay cool, Blady.
We appreciate it, Bill. You can follow him online at I Love Blood all over the internet, as well as his, what's his, Billy D Takes Snaps.
Billy D Snaps.
Billy D Snaps on Instagram. Billy D Takes Photos, or Billy D Takes Pics. On Facebook. He's a great photographer. Great photographer.
Yeah.
We appreciate it, Bill. Thank you so much. Another segment we do, cinemacrespediso at gmail.com is our email address. Our listeners write us emails and we read them. Well, Drew reads them on the show. In a segment we call the Vox Populi.
I know what you've all been waiting for. The world famous
Vox Populi. Vox Populi. Vox Populi.
Here, Drew, take this peanut butter sandwich and read us the emails.
Hey, Deeso, we got a email from Cremella.
What's up, Cremella?
Hey, Deeso Duo.
Hey, that's us.
Love the midweek movie news shows. Drew was spot on about the infamous Hitler moon landing. And I loved hearing Drew's travel stories in the red light district of Amsterdam. Keep them coming, Drew and Chris.
All right, listen to our last bonus episode to hear Drew's Amsterdam adventures. I also talk about a little bit of my Amsterdam adventures.
You were there too.
Well, you had two separate Amsterdam adventures.
Well, I did go twice.
You went twice. I've been once. Have you ever been to Amsterdam, Kyle? You seem like the type of guy who would love a good Amsterdam adventure.
You really would.
You would be at home there.
My mom asked me once, she goes,
if we were going to Amsterdam, would you smoke marijuana?
Yes.
It's legal. Why?
It's legal. Because when in Rome, you do as the Romans. Yeah. And when in hell, you do shots at the bar.
Exactly.
And when in Amsterdam, you go to the weed. Coffee shop. Yeah. And you get a... Actually, you know what? In Amsterdam, do not get the pre-roll joints.
And do not get the space cake either.
Okay, yeah. Don't get any edible foods that are like cakes because they don't have any sort of FDA regulation. So you're liable to get cake that's been sitting on a shelf for a couple months and it can get you sick. Like food poisoning. And then don't get pre-rolled joints because they mix in tobacco in there. So if you're not a cigarette smoker, you're going to hurt yourself.
It's a very European thing.
Yeah,
yes, to mix in the tobacco. I think that's a bunch of bullshit. Europeans listen to the show. Shout out to our listeners in Wolverhampton. Get that tobacco.
Shropshire.
Actually, the Shropshire downloads have dropped off. But plenty of downloads in Chesterfield.
Nice to have that Crooked Spire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we get some pretty good UK downloads, actually.
Hey, you know,
people, take the tobacco out of your weed. Just smoke the weed.
Also, they drink their beer lukewarm. You know?
I'm okay with that. Certain beers taste fine because you get a good flavor profile out of that.
When we went to Amsterdam that time, we also went to Germany, and we literally went into a random
supermarket.
Grabbed
where their beer selection was like, oh my god, it's like going to an ABC liquor, but it was just a supermarket. Yeah. Many beers.
Grabbed a bunch of local lukewarm German beers,
including some Czech Vars, the original Budweiser,
and drank them in the car while everybody drove us to Amsterdam.
So in Germany, you can have open alcohol in the car, but the driver can't have any. But all the passengers can drink away. So Drew and I are pounding Czech Vars.
At 11 a.m.
No, lukewarm Czech Vars at 11 a.m. on the way to Amsterdam.
Yeah, car tending.
Yeah. Oh, they were so good, though.
It was delicious.
They were so delicious. Why are we still talking about that? Shout out to Carmella. You're a good dude.
We got an email from Scott.
Go to Amsterdam, Kyle. It's great.
It's great. Email from Scott.
Colorado, although they don't have a red light district there. Anyway, go ahead.
He's got an Operation Finale review.
Operation Finale, the Let's Kill a Nazis movie starring Oscar Isaac.
About Adolf Eichmann.
Yes.
It was painfully slow in the buildup, so slow that I actually fought the urge to fall asleep in the cold, dark theater.
Oh, that's not good.
I might have nodded off once or twice, but only for a second. But once they actually nabbed Eichmann, the slumber wore off and I was fully engaged.
Okay.
So,
great story.
I was so in when I first saw the trailer of Oscar Isaac and Sir Ben Kingsley telling this tale.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking forward to a seething boil between two amazing actors, but it just never roils beyond a simmer. Nothing about this movie is anything more than just okay.
Mm.
If the honest-to-God story was actually this bland, maybe I could accept it, but I find that hard to believe, and that's not what Hollywood is supposed to deliver on the big screen when depicting such a huge event. If the truth is banal, then bend the truth. You're Hollywood. It's what you do.
Make it exciting.
2.5 stars. Take care, guys.
All right.
I gotta argue with that. Because sometimes I think that the movie is, again, years later, the movie will probably be hailed as, oh, really.
It could be. I don't know. We haven't seen it, so we don't know it. It's possible.
Because that's, I've read the couple books on the Eichmann abduction. It's pretty,
But like Scott says, it's possible that just the way they depict the abduction, maybe it's not the best way they could have done it.
I mean, dude,
you're
talking like, it's God's chosen people, and now they're back for vengeance. They're in Argentina. They're going to kick some ass.
Yeah.
Watch out, Adolf Eichmann.
That's funny. Well, that actually, it's funny you say. It makes me think of how X-Men First Class, it starts with Magneto hunting down Nazis in Argentina.
Yeah. Dude,
it's I want to see that X-Men movie.
Dude, after that happened, like guys like Joseph Mengele,
they all went over there.
Klaus Barbie, they were like, scheisse.
Yeah, we got to go. Well, we just sent back finally, like the final known, like German defector. Which is like, fuck these people. But then at this point, they're all living into their 80s and 90s anyway. Who cares what happens to them? They've lived their full lives. They got to live their lives.
I think it's the humiliation, the calling out of.
I guess so. At this point, at the end, same thing with Cosby. At the very end, at least he gets his just desserts at the end of the road.
But I think we're talking about previously, yesterday, this retroactive, bringing back this kind of neo civil rights redneck era. We're going through it again. You want to be like this, guys? Here's a 90-year-old guy who thought like that. You know what? We're shipping his ass back to Israel or Germany.
To go to the Hague.
Screw you, dude.
And faces justice. You guys want that now? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That.
You want to be like that at 90? Okay, go ahead.
Fair enough. All right, well, thanks, Scott, for the Operation Finale review. We appreciate it.
And we got an email from Ron.
Ron is our homie out in L.A. Shout-outs to Ron. Just back from London.
Saw Black Klansman in L.A.
Okay.
I got a liberal bleeding heart, loved the movie enough to clap at the end. I'm still annoyed with clapping. No one hears you from production, so to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Maybe in LA, but I'm still annoyed. But it's still shot happened less than 100 years ago. People still think that they can fix it, not even in a generation.
Talk about racism.
Bigotry on all fronts shall never go away. It still baffles me, people hating Jews. That makes no sense. Drew, I miss you on Twitter.
Aww.
I'm sorry, Ron.
Aww.
Did you get the new Spider-Man? Yes, I did. I heard it's pretty good. I'm still stuck on my JRPG good. I can't stop. I love the fact that y'all put anime on here now. You know I'm full otaku. I still suggest you give Madoka Magical a try, even if you enhance your state of mind. There is the series or the movie format. The movie format is a condensed version, but I highly suggest the series.
Okay.
It's dubbed for your pleasure. Speaking of pleasure, I think since Europe, I am okay being called daddy now when I fucking otter or twink. It's super awkward when I'm only 37, but I come to accept that that size and ethnic supremacy kind of lean on the on into whose sexual atmosphere. Would y'all be okay being called daddy as you do your partner as they ride you in your lap, your face in their chest? Great big hugs, Big Daddy Ron.
Oh, Ron.
I guess Ron had some fun in Europe.
It's funny how... Oh, hell yeah, he did. It's funny how we previously assumed this up on an episode that Ron was younger than us, but he's technically older.
Older, yeah.
At 37. Being called daddy at 37. I guess
if
your partner is young enough.
I mean, it's the at that point in time you're old enough to be somebody's father.
If I'm banging out some co-ed,
yeah.
I guess technically at 16 years I could have made some poor decisions at 16.
Oh yeah,
I know some ladies I could have made some poor decisions at 16.
You ever called? Got mad at a girlfriend and you say yes mother, it never, you're talking like days of
that,
silence.
That's bad. Never call your significant
other.
Either
way.
Yeah.
Whenever they're like, you know,
it's funny that does go the
yeah,
other way.
You're right, it does. Hey daddy. Yeah, it's kinda weird.
I never thought of that.
How come we're not really intimate with me anymore? didn't you call me daddy 2 days ago?
Yeah.
I'm still kind of reeling.
That's why.
I will say, when I was in college at the age of 18, a lot of the girls that we were friends with, like in the dorms or whatever, I found out through the grapevine that a lot of them saw me as like a dad sort, but not in like a daddy sort of way, but more like a dad. And that was the most heartbreaking thing I could have.
Because that's why. That's like why some, you got no action.
That's like some paternal, exactly, paternal non-pussy bullshit as opposed to.
Or they've got daddy issues.
Well, no, if they had the daddy issues, then it would have been fine for him, but they didn't.
I don't think they did. I think
Boogie Nights kind of.
I think they all had fine parental situations, which did not work out in my
sexual favor. No.
So we're gonna move on. Thanks, thanks for the emails,
thanks, Ron.
Guys. Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, and then of course, Blady. That's all emails?
That's everything.
All right, here
it's
we go.
It's a good thing, too, because my battery died.
All right, movie news.
Check out Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel showing off their hot beach bods during their romantic Caribbean getaway.
Opens up about navigating the holidays with ex-wife Reese Witherspoon.
Leia is spilling the beans about a secret Star Wars affair. Apparently, Han wasn't so solo after all.
He has been melting down. He's been berating fans, walking off stage. So what's going on with the beans?
That's right. Time for the most important segment in all of podcasting, the Cinema Crustability So Movie News segment. Ben Affleck still going through rehab, allowed to go home every day to work out at his home gym. He goes with a sober coach, but then checks back in at rehab at the end of the night.
What's he in rehab for?
Alcoholism.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
He looks pretty good for an alcoholic.
He does look good. Actually, he's a little puffy in the face.
Have you seen the back tattoo?
No.
He definitely did that while he was drunk.
I gotta love back tattoos. Something you pay for, you'll never see.
Oh, yeah.
Except when you go to the beach and then the paparazzi is photographing you from a distance and people can see the terrible phoenix.
But if you get one, like, hey, what'd you get? Oh, I got a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yeah.
No, the guy gave me his grocery list. How do you know?
How do you know? It says in your back, it says milk, eggs, toilet paper.
Yes.
That is hysterical. Also, he has been seen, he's still dating his 22, 23-year-old Playboy model friend, Shauna Sexton.
That's cool.
Good for him. Good for Ben
sounds
Affleck.
Sounds like he needs to team up with Matt Damon again.
Matt Damon says he will never abandon his friend Ben Affleck no matter what problems he's going through. So I actually
look at that thing.
That looks stupid.
He's got that on his back.
That's not
real.
Next time on Midlife Crisis.
Yes, exactly.
Starring Ben Affleck.
100%. That's what that is. That's a midlife crisis. Yeah. Okay, movie news. I said we were going to talk about this in the first half. We're bringing it up. The Predator.
Yes.
Predator comes out this weekend. Shane Black wrote it and directed it. Shane Black actually acted in the first movie.
So are we talking about
from the 80s?
Yeah, in the 80s. He was the one with the glasses who was telling all the jokes to Sonny Landham's character. It's like, gee, she's got a big pussy.
Yeah, my brother could remember just as a kid, it's on VHS constantly.
Yeah.
My brother would recite it.
I watched it so many times.
Line for line. Yes. I have never been able to take or stomach Predator.
Interesting.
Yeah, there we go.
Interesting.
That and Die Hard.
Interesting.
Oh, that's so good.
I just can't get into the.
You know what?
I've never had. Like,
you know what the common denominator is between Predator and Die Hard? No, Predator and Die Hard.
What?
John McTiernan directed both.
There we go.
Maybe you're an anti-John McTiernan guy.
It's those bad action movie dialogue. Like
the dialogue is yes. Well, Predator more so.
Like
than Predator has. I ain't got time to bleed.
I was just like. I'm like 13 years old watching.
I'm like,
this is terrible.
It should be right up your alley. It should be something that you love.
I'm like, this is
Chris dead.
Oh yeah, I still do love it. Still love Predator. So, but yeah, I'm a big 80s action goon, 100%. I put on Bloodsport on Amazon Prime the other day, just so I could feel again. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So the Predator is coming out this weekend. A big R-rated butt production. It was supposed to be a summer release. Got pushed to the middle of September. Not a good sign. It screened last week. The reviews are out. Pretty middling. Not that great. And now the big news came out that Drew was just alluding to.
The Predator got taken out of the Predator.
Yes. So, Olivia...
Wrong Predator.
Though. Olivia Munn is in the movie. She's an actress in the movie. And she finds out somehow, she doesn't say how, that one of the actors that she acted with in a handful of scenes that ultimately...
3 minutes.
Yeah, 3 minutes of screen time. It was just a joke scene. The actor she was working with is a bust... On a sexual offender list.
Oh, cool.
His crime, his crime being trying to lure a 14-year-old
girl on the internet. Oh, yeah.
So the old the internet crime type thing, right? Misuse of a computer. Uh-huh.
That's cool.
Now the thing is, this guy is the friend of Shane Black.
Has been since Lethal Weapon.
Has been for a long time. So Shane Black, this guy now.
Shane Black knew.
I'm gonna give Shane Black. Based on his last statement that he released, I'm going to give Shane Black the benefit of the doubt. Shane Black says, that his friend presented him with a series of facts that did not line up with what came out in court. Shane Black never decided to look up what came up in court and took his friend at his word for it.
Yeah.
So he's been putting him in movies ever since. Put him in the Nice Guys. Is he in Iron Man 3? I'm not sure. Put him in The Predator. Olivia Munn found out she worked with a sexual offender. She was like, that's not cool. She went to Fox. Said, Fox, this dude was on a sexual offender list. Are you cool with this? Fox is like, fuck no.
Well, Fox, legally, Fox isn't allowed to do a background check on the Raptors.
Their statement said we were not allowed to do background checks.
Yeah, there's some sort of weird law that prevents them from doing it.
So they were like, this is not on us immediately. Yeah. Shane Black had to put out a statement saying, I'm sorry about this, guys. I should have consulted my coworkers when I decided to put a sexual offender on my payroll. Now Olivia Munn, who has got this guy ousted out of the movie, the scenes have been cut. Mm. Because he plays like a jogger who hits on her character. It's like a non-issue what these scenes were. It was literally just throwing this guy a bone so he could get some work.
Yeah.
Olivia Munn is now saying that she is finding herself to be persona non grata. She had a series of interviews scheduled to promote the movie. The co-actors that were scheduled to be with her, almost all of them have canceled. So no one wants to be seen with her on camera talking about this stuff. One interview she did with one of her co-actors, didn't say who, walked off the interview, walked away from the interview when the subject of the scenes came up. And the only actor who did say anything is Trevante Rhodes, who was in Kong Skull Island, mm-hmm. and yeah. I think it was in Kong Skull Island, as well as the Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
And he's the only one who said anything like, oh, this is fucked up, blah, 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 I stand with Olivia Munn. But she is finding herself like, she's like, I feel like I've done something wrong based on the way everyone is treating me. She is talking about leaving Hollywood and stopping acting. Because she's like, if this is the price of standing up for what I believe in and doing what's right, I don't want to have to deal with this industry anymore. So she may quit as an actress.
That is her own prerogative.
Or do her own thing.
Yeah.
She's gotten this far. She can do her own thing.
Well, at this
point
now, she has built up a name clout. And a fan base. She could, you know what, Olivia Munn? Start a podcast. Start Olivia Munn Cast.
Yeah,
and
start a podcast.
And you'll get enough downloads right away where you can monetize it and you can make a few $1,000s a month. I'm sure
she's into journalism, make some low budget.
Do something. That's the thing. Yeah. She's been in X-Men Apocalypse. She's been. Yeah. She's made money now. Hopefully she's done enough where she can walk away. Because now she's like, I spoke up for what I believe in. I don't want to be in a movie with a sex offender. We got the scene cut and now like I'm the dickhead. Now I'm the bad person. That's fucked up.
I'm with you. It's funny. You ever known someone you grew up with that was like, what'd you get fired for?
Yeah, really? That's the thing. So
and then you see him around, you're
yeah, like this is my friend who grew up together, but then they make a decision that's so fucked up. So what's the line? When do you, quote, abandon your friends? When do you break that off?
Well, that's on you.
It is on you. But it's contextual,
or
right?
Or you're just like, hey, my friend's coming. I'll meet with you later.
Did this guy do
bring his kids over? And I don't think we should need, mix.
Oh, what was it? A 14-year-old? Anyway. Zima's? Yeah. I'm assuming Mike's Hard Lemonade was involved at some point.
More than likely.
Right?
Maybe some Boone's Farm.
So, I don't know. It's like, it's just even though the whole Me Too thing is happening and the Time's Up movement and all that, this shit, this rape culture, toxic masculinity, backing up the bros thing is still happening. And, I don't know. And it sucks that's happening for around a movie like The Predator, which it's screened and it's not even getting that great reviews, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, the more I found out about the movie and how it was going and the reshoots,
the less and less I'm liking
all,
it.
Yeah, it all.
And you're wearing your Kill Your Master shirt.
I am.
Kyle, we've been saying on the show for a long time. I'm interested to know what you think about this. No more heroes. It's one thing to look up to a person and appreciate their artistic accomplishments. I'm a fan of Shane Black. I love movies he writes. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is great. The Nice Guys is fantastic, right? Yeah. I'm a big Shane Black fan. I don't know if I ever want to hang out with him.
Yeah,
I don't know if I want. I don't know if I want to have a drink with him.
Not as a human being.
Not just based on this instance, but also I heard a podcast with him. He did an episode of Doug Loves Movies a couple years ago where he didn't come across as like the greatest dude. Like he seemed okay, but I don't know. So no more heroes is what we're trying to say around these parts.
I've met.
But then again, as a music interviewer, you've met heroes.
Yeah, when I first moved to New York, I wanted to get as many as I could in the can, and a lot of them were great to me. I actually worked for a guy,
yeah,
whom I loved his work as a person. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is what
it's kind of a shitty guy.
This is what Charlie Parker was like.
Yeah,
but then I met another one I worked for a long time, which I would like, man, this is what I want to kind of base my career off of.
Yeah.
You know,
there are good people out there. Not everyone is shitty, But then to just venerate people without knowing who they really are is dangerous. Because then you end up with a Mel Gibson situation.
Where
I love Mel Gibson for years, and then he's like yelling on his phone to his now ex-wife or ex-girlfriend, I hope a pack of N-words rape you. Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. You can't even just leave it at N-words. You want to refer to him as a pack.
Yeah,
like a group like of animals. Yes. God damn it, Mel Gibson. I was a fan. Now you're a monster.
You know, we'll say this. I met Robert Downey Sr., a guy I've been into.
Oh, yeah. Robert Downey Jr.'s father.
Putney Swope.
Yeah, Greaser's
Palace.
Yeah, sure.
I have been fascinated with this guy's work for years, and I met him at a screening of him talking about his movies. And I got to meet him through a BBC connection. And
okay.
We ended up talking. And I was so nervous thinking, because I heard he
suffers no fools. Like, you don't fuck up in your interview. Ask the right questions or else they'll tell you.
Yeah, well, anyway, I ended up working for him for years and I still know him.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, this guy, you know, look him up. There's a lot of controversy behind Senior as compared to Junior and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he couldn't be the more nicer, encouraging.
Really?
Encouraging and supportive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the opposite.
Dude in the world.
That's the opposite. You're hearing a bad reputation.
And he's actually a really nice guy.
And the day you meet him is fantastic.
And anytime I go to New York, and whenever we have lunch or meet up for something, it's incredibly special.
Yeah.
It's like a very New York moment. I'm thinking, here I am with
Robert Downey Sr.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you watch like Boogie Nights or like Magnolia.
Yeah.
And he's me and P.T. Anderson.
Yeah.
We hang with
And we chill.
Well, it's like, oh, imagine if I'm just gonna call Burt Reynolds and we go get a cup of coffee, you know, because that's the type of guy he is, and that's how we hang out. Yeah, it's
but
great.
I was so nervous.
It's great when that happens. My cousin, who's a filmmaker up in New York, he got to hang out for a day with Tim Burton in his home. And Tim Burton was, to him, the most gracious person.
Yeah.
And you like hearing stuff about that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's cool that these huge artists can also be nice, humble people. But then you hear other stories about, like, oh, yeah, Gary Oldman is a monster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, allegedly.
Gil Scott Heron was a train wreck.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, I wish I'd never met him.
But the music, though.
He was so just, like... I'm not going to get into me.
But still, that's how it happens.
You're like, wow.
That's why I'm saying no more heroes, because you could meet someone, they'll be great, or you can meet them and they'll be terrible. And then what does that do for your opinion of them? Shane Black, it's kind of shitty. I mean, can you believe him? I don't know. The Predator, will it even be a good movie? Will any of this even be worth it?
Probably not.
Probably not.
But then,
we're going to find out in about 5 days.
Yep.
5 days.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out soon.
What's on the agenda next?
That's it for your movie news. So actually,
that is the agenda.
It's time to wrap this thing up with the lightning round. Here we go.
We give you the questions, you give us the answers. Time for the lightning round.
Kyle, I have 10 questions.
Okay.
I'm going to read them to you, and I need you to answer them as fast as you can.
Okay.
So we can get inside your brain.
All right.
Drew, start that clock.
Go.
Number one, what is your favorite Transformer?
Optimus Prime.
Number two, why do we do anything?
It's better than not.
Number three, where is the art?
In your soul.
Number four, should almond milk be called milk?
Sure.
Number five, burial or cremation?
Donation.
Number six, could we create the perfect donut?
We have already.
Number seven, do you know about Nub City?
No.
Number eight, how can we prove that we have loyalty or royalty in our DNA?
Who cares?
Number nine, would you listen to a show about dinosaurs called The Sorrow Podcast?
Sure.
Number ten, what is the age of reason?
Still trying to find it.
Still trying to figure it out. Drew Sacogburn, let's bring out some swag baggery. Kyle, we have this blue bag. We have that green bag. Which bag do you maybe want to go home with today?
Polka dots are a favorite pattern.
All right, polka dots. Here we go. Drew, break out the polka dot bag and let Kyle know what he may go home with.
Sir, you may get to go home with a 2-pack of bouncy punch balls. You blow them up and you punch them with your fist.
Yes, punch them balls.
We've got a Disney Pixar's The Good Dinosaur Arlo's Journey mini kids book.
Yes.
With $1.
Celebrate one of the least liked Pixar movies.
We've got a 3-pack of Play-Doh Grab and Go. You can just play with Play-Doh whenever you want.
Play it with Play-Doh.
We've got a Cinema Crespedito bootleg edition of Return of the Dragon.
Yes, starring Chuck Norris.
We've got a PFT magnet and a few stickers in there as well.
Kyle, this bag of swag can be yours. You can take it home, or we put the bag away, and instead you take what we have in a box right over here. It's the mystery of the box. You know for sure what's in the bag. You have no idea what's in that box. What do you want?
It could be better. It could be worse.
Yes.
I'm thinking Family Guy episode where Peter picked the box and he got comedy club tickets.
That's true.
Instead of a boat.
There could be comedy club tickets or a boat in there.
There could be a boat in here.
It could be a boat. There could be keys or a boat.
The balloons. Have you guys ever...
The punch balloons?
Those are the ultimate water balloons.
Yeah, fine. Yes.
I've never used a punch balloon as a water balloon.
They don't pop so well sometimes.
Oh, you can, because you can actually get out of a car and swirl them around.
Yeah, they got the string on them.
The statute of limitations of me doing that is long past.
I'm sure it is. Okay. Which is why you brought it up.
It involved construction, muck.
Yeah.
You get a can.
You get yourself in some trouble there.
You cut both ends of it out. You got to put the end of it around it.
Yeah. Sure.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want. That's where portalets come in handy.
Oh,
that's bad.
You can fill that bad boy up.
That's really bad. So if I'm understanding you right, are you trying to go home with these balloons?
I want the balloons. Yeah.
You want the balloons? All right, give them that bag.
I haven't gone to jail in a while.
Well, then you get it, sir. There we go. Where's my... I relabeled everything. Where is the person's right?
Why can't you... Come on, Chris. Find it. Do your job.
I relabeled everything. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us, buddy.
It's been a pleasure. Hey, can we talk about some movies real quick?
What do you got?
Okay, we were talking about The Martian.
Yes.
Yesterday?
Oh, Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Which is...
1960s flick.
I've never seen it. I know about Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jeff Daniels.
What, you got it? What's that?
You ever seen this movie?
Super Sucker?
Jeff Daniels wrote and directed this incredibly weird comedy.
Drew's a big Jeff Daniels fan.
I like Jeff Daniels.
Okay, it's a movie about door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman and sexual aids... and meeting your sales quota.
Seriously?
It's absurd. It's brilliant.
When's it from? A 90s movie? 2000s?
No, early 2000s.
Okay.
He wrote it and directed. He also wrote
2003.
Wrote Moonlight and Escabia.
Written and directed by Jeff Daniels.
Yes, they are freaking brilliant and no one knows about
it. All right, there you go. That is another pick of the week.
Super Sucker.
Last second pick of the week. Super Sucker with Jeff Daniels. Drew's looking at the DVD right now.
Door-to-door salesman, vacuum cleaners, ladies' sexual aids, and meeting your sales quota. All wrapped together in one absurdist comedy.
Fantastic. There you go. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us, friend.
It's been a pleasure being here, man.
That was great. That was a great show. Drew, thank you, sir.
You're very welcome, sir.
Thank you, everyone, for downloading and listening. We appreciate it. Make sure you break up the big banks, read more books, be excellent to each other, and free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and kill your masters. We are out of here.
I have one of those t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Free
Mumia Abu-Jamal. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Kyle knows. Yeah. Kyle knows.
You like Jeff Daniels?
A PFT Media production.